Good morning, and welcome to the September 16, 2005 Zoning Administrator Agenda Hearing. And my name is Glenda Hill. I'm a Principal Planner of the Planning Department, and I'll be the Deputy Zoning Administrator for today's hearing. We will begin with the continued items, and that begins with item number one, which is application 05-0025. It is a proposal to construct a one-story, 2,272-square-foot single-family dwelling and detached 960-square-foot garage. It requires a coastal development permit, agricultural buffer determination, grading permit, significant tree removal permit to remove 9 eucalyptus trees, and zoning administrators sign off to utilize a less than 40-foot right-of-way, variance for less than 100-foot frontage, side area variances, parcel legality determinations, and certificate of compliance. The property is located off Lily Way, behind 86 Lily Way, accessed through a driveway easement along the northern boundary of 86 Lily Way in La Selva Beach. The parcel number is 046-241-42-43. The applicant is Miguel Podolsky. For the owner, David Massey. It's in the second supervisorial district. The project planner is Joan Vanderhoven. And Joan, do you have a staff report?
Thank you, I do. To begin with, I have a couple of administrative details to just bring us up to date. On page 2 of the staff report, under the environmental information, the subheading for the environmental sensitive habitat, I had a typo there and had not mapped. Please delete the not. The area is mapped, but there was no physical evidence found on site. So that correction to the staff report, please. In addition, we have received 3 items of correspondence from the Vossa Williams Law Firm, dated August 29th, September 7th, and September 13th. These were received after the staff reports were duplicated, so they were not a part of the staff report, but will be part of the official record. Since the meeting was held so long ago, I would like to just go over the basic facts of the case, just to bring us all up to speed. This application was accepted by the Planning Department on January the 19th of this year, and was initially reviewed by the County Agricultural Policy Advisory Commission on March 17th of this year. A reduced agricultural buffer setback was approved subject to mitigations. The property in front of it, over which the access easement is proposed, number 046-221-42, did receive a coastal development permit number 97-0808 back on March the 6th, 1998. Subject property is characterized by flat topography sloping upwards toward the adjacent commercial agricultural land. The parcel is not located within the urban services line and may be characterized as a low-density residential neighborhood immediately adjacent to Manresa State Park and commercial agriculture. Development of the parcel does not impact access to the nearby coastal area, which is accessed by the public at either Sunset Beach or Manresa State Beach in the project vicinity. The subject property is a 3.5-acre parcel, currently is vacant. It's located in the Commercial Agriculture Zone District, and this designation does allow residential uses. The proposed single-family residence and detached garage would constitute an allowed use in the zone district. And the project is consistent with the site's agriculture type 3 general plan designation. The project is consistent with development regulations of the County Code section 1310.313 in that no variations other than the approved agricultural buffer setback reduction and site area variance are required. A significant tree removal permit is required as 9 eucalyptus trees are proposed to be removed. As per County Code section 1634.060, a removal permit may be granted where the trees pose a potential threat to health and safety. Recent winter storms have, this was written in January, recent winter storms have resulted in falling trees. The adjacent state park has removed similar trees in the immediate vicinity due to public safety concerns. Removal of non-native trees and their subsequent replacement with native species, as per the agricultural buffer determination, is recommended. No scenic resources are degraded as a result of the removal of these trees, as neither of the sites are visible from the beach nor the San Andreas Scenic Corridor. A zoning administrator sign-off to utilize a less than 40-foot right-of-way is not required, as two separate 20-foot right-of-way easements are proposed to be utilized for the project access. APN 046241-14, State of California, has recorded a 20-foot-wide strip in Book 2550, page 573, on October the 20th, 1975, which is Exhibit K of the staff report. An additional 20-foot-wide easement over APN 046241-42 for the subject parcel was granted as document number 1997-0061366 on December 24, 1997, Exhibit H. The right-of-way would serve only the subject parcel 1 residence. Project frontage is located on the northern parcel boundary with a 523.35-foot length, so a variance will not be required. County Code Section 1310.313, Development for Standards, requires a 100-foot frontage for commercial agriculture zone land. A side area variance is required for APN 046241-42. That's the Podolsky project in front of the subject parcel. As per County Code Section 1310.323.3A, parcels reduced due to right-of-way dedications. As the parcel was reduced in area by approximately 9,524 feet as a result of granting the 20-foot-wide, 476-foot-long easement. The resulting parcel area is 3.3 acres, which is below the required 20 arable acres for CA zone land, Type 3 commercial agricultural land as per General Plan Policy 5.13.14C. The parcel has not been actively farmed for more than 40 years, and is developed with an existing single-family residence and a detached garage, which coastal permit, as we said earlier, was granted on March 6, 1998. 5-acre minimum parcel zoning was established in 1963 after the parcels were created. That's Exhibit J. Parcel legality status has been confirmed, as the applicant has provided a chain of title showing that the subject parcel with the current development proposal has existed in this configuration since July 27, 1964. Santa Cruz County Assessor's maps further document parcel configuration as existing as of December 1961, Exhibit I. Staff did stop in at the Environmental Health Service yesterday and spoke with Andrew Strader, Environmental Health Specialist 3, County with the County's Health Service Agency. One of the requirements for issuing a certificate of compliance, I understand under Section 66499.34 of the Government Code, says issuance of a permit or grant of approval for development of real property or with respect to improvements that have been completed prior to the time of a permit or grant of approval for development was required by local ordinances in effect at the time of the improvement, or with respect to improvements that have been completed in reliance upon a permit or grant of approval for development, shall constitute real property which has been approved for development for the purposes of subdivision of Section 66499.35, and upon the request of the person owning the property or vendee of such person pursuant to the contract of sale, the local agency shall record a certificate of compliance for the affected real property. Since internal records from the county, from the Environmental Health Service, indicate active connections on APNs 046241-41 through 43, the three parcels. These connections are connections number 92 through 94. This does confirm that the county has issued development rights for those three parcels on Lily Way, along with the other ones in the list there for the San Andreas Mutual Water Company. The proposed single-family residence and detached garage is in conformance with the county's certified local coastal program in that the structure is sited and designed to be visually compatible, in scale with, and integrated with the character of the surrounding neighborhood. Developed areas in the parcel contain single-family dwellings. Size and architectural styles vary widely in the area, and the design submitted is not inconsistent with the existing range. The project site is not located between the shoreline and the First Public Road and is not identified as a priority acquisition site in the county's local coastal program. Consequently, the proposed project will not interfere with public access to the beach, ocean, or any other nearby body of water. Removal of the 9 eucalyptus trees and a tree stump in the area of the proposed driveway is recommended to remove the non-native trees as approved by the county to restore native vegetation and landscaping to the area consistent with County Code Section 16.34.060. A landscaping plan to buffer the site from adjacent commercial agriculture shall mitigate for the loss of these non-native trees. Environmental review is not required for the proposed project per the requirements of CEQA, as the project qualifies for a categorical exemption as per Section 15303, new construction of small structures. As proposed and conditioned, the project is consistent with all applicable codes and policies of the Zoning Ordinance and General Plan LCP. Staff is recommending approval of application number 05-0025 based on the attached findings and conditions, and certification that the proposal is exempt from further environmental review under CEQA. Staff has not received any further communications from the public at large other than the 3 Basso Williams letters. This concludes staff's report.
Thank you. I just want to clarify for the record that the project description, as it was advertised and as read into the record, is incorrect in that a zoning administrator's sign-off to utilize a less than 40-foot right-of-way and a variance for less than 100-foot frontage are not needed for this project. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. This, just to let you know before I open the public hearing up, I have listened to all the previous tapes of the meetings for this item. I've also read all the previous material that has been submitted, and also have talked to the zoning administrator for those previous items, Don Bussey. So I have gotten myself as best I can up to speed for this item. And with that, I'll open the public hearing. Applicant has 10 minutes to speak. I don't see anyone else that will testify to this, so.
Good morning. My name is Miguel Podolsky. I'm the project architect for the Massey residence. Just a couple things about the description of the projects. I'm still not clear, and I don't know that it has that much relevance, why there is a site area reduction variance required. The easement that was granted for this parcel, for parcel 43, over my parcel, parcel 42, was done in 97. Consequently, and shortly afterwards, I applied for a building permit. So the easement was already granted when I applied for the building permit. If there was any variance required, it should have been then, not now. And there should have not been a variance required because it was stipulated on the application that there was an easement granted for the other parcel 43. I don't know that it has much relevance, but I wanted to state that. The other thing is there's 9 eucalyptus to be removed. That may not be accurate. Zoning Administrator Don Bussey came to the property. I toured him around. Many of the eucalyptus were removed by the state park. About a couple of years ago, they decided to take many trees down because of safety. Inadvertently, they came into my property and onto the massive property, and they knocked down about 20 trees. Some of them were left falling over. So the surveys prior to that occurrence, there might be less than those trees. I think there's only about 3 or 4 trees that need to be removed. More importantly, what needs to be done is to trim the top heavy trees and sort of manage that forest. I've done that on my property. Every year I spend a certain amount of money to keep on trimming and keeping the grove healthy. So I just wanted to stress the importance of managing the grove. It's probably far more important and getting rid of the trees that are falling than the ones that have to be removed. Architectural-wise, I think the staff report describes the project. I'm here to answer any questions. It's a for today's standards, a reasonable-sized house, 2,300 square feet on 3 acres, one story. It doesn't obstruct any other neighbors' views. We've talked to the adjacent neighbors. Everybody seems to be happy enough with the project. Only one neighbor on Crest requested an additional buffer from Pitosphorums, which is the kind of bushes that we proposed on the south, so we agreed to that. And I'm here to answer any other questions. There's one other thing regarding the water main connection. There's a water main of 6 inches that was put as part of an agreement that we constructed with San Andreas Water Company when I first acquired the property, my property. And I put together the neighbor's agreement, and across the street there's a 6-inch line that comes all the way from Sendling there, all the way in the northern boundary, and there's water connections for each one of those three parcels. The water connection constitutes of a 6-inch main line, a T where the future meter is going to be tapped in, and a fire hydrant. That is the water connection. Sometimes we've had problems with pipes being burst by tractors doing other kinds of work around, including removal of trees. That's why we put the concrete guards there. Now, the meter is not set until the house is finished, because there's nothing to meter, and also because it's a fairly expensive piece of hardware, and sometimes those are stolen. So the policy is not to ever set them until there's a house to be metered. And any other questions, I'm here to answer. Thank you very much.
Yes, I have a couple of questions and explanations regarding the side area variance for the adjacent property that you own. When in 1997, when that right-of-way was created, technically that was a violation of the zoning ordinance, in that the size of your lot by the creation of the right-of-way was further reduced below the minimum zoning size. What we're doing at this point, and I assume what Joan is trying to do, that's my understanding of it, is to make that right officially in our records. So that's what is happening at that point.
Thanks for the explanation. I didn't quite understand it. But
that way you won't have a lingering question of violation on your property, so it's a bit of a cleanup. And yes, it certainly should have been taken care of back when you got your permit, but this is an opportunity to correct that and make everything right for the record at this time. So that's why, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but that's why you're recommending that at this point in time.
Thanks for the explanation.
Okay, you're welcome. So when you say about the eucalyptus trees, do I understand you to say you don't think you're going to need to remove additional trees, but you may have to do some trimming of
It's a little difficult to establish. I walked it and tried to mark the ones that are on the proposed 20-foot. I think there's about 30 trees that are close enough. It could be that they have to be removed. I don't think there's 9 trees. I think there's about 3,
okay,
maybe 4. There are trees that are fallen, and they're fallen across the path. So those have to be, they're fallen, but they have to be
right.
Removed.
Right.
And there's a lot of cleanup that needs to be done. Just to give you an idea, in order to do it properly, to clean up the thing, there's needs for a whole full week of a crew with the crane. And
mm-hmm.
It's substantial improvement that needs to be done. But I think there's significantly less trees to be removed than what is called in the report, because the survey is about 3 years old, and it was done for another project when the masses thought that they were going to build on the 6 acres. That's when the survey was done. After that, the state park came and knocked off all the trees.
Mm-hmm.
So there's less trees now than there used to be on the survey. So I don't think it has as much importance, and this is what I explained to Don Bussi, how many trees. There's less trees, but what's far more important is to clean up the trees that are thrown all over the place, because the branches are falling over other trees and compromising the integrity of other trees.
Okay.
It's a matter of management more than saying we take so many trees. It's
right. Okay, thank you. One of the things that came to my attention yesterday that was submitted were two photographs, color photographs, which I have here, and if I could have you just explain what it is we're looking at, or what I'm looking at on these two photographs, so it's clear for the record.
Okay.
mark those photographs 1 and 2 so
yes,
we know what
be happy
talking
to.
About. So, photo 1 is of a field and photo 2 has the hydrant in it.
Yeah, photograph 1 simply attempts to show the area within the location of the site. It only tries to show that you're within the grove of the eucalyptus and that you can see the site to the north because we're looking from south to north. Okay. Photograph 2 is actually in the grove and shows the fire hydrant, the water connection, and the concrete guards that will establish where the box and the meter are going to be tapped into when the house is built.
And if I understand it correctly, the location of that fire hydrant is at the very west edge of the property? Location of the...
It's at the very corner of the property,
correct. Very the corner of the property. Okay, thank you for that. Just wanted to make that clear that we had an explanation of what we were looking at in those two photos since they are part of the record, so I appreciate that. And you can certainly return those to Joan.
Northerly, westerly corner of the property.
The northwest corner of the property. I have a question. This property is owned by Mr. Massey. The property directly to the south, APN 46241 is owned by Marie Massey. On both of these, in the assessor's information that we can view, it says et al. Do you know if Mr. Massey has any interest in the property or Marie Massey has any interest in the subject property?
I think I'll defer to legal counsel.
They're both owned by individual trusts, the Wilderness Trust 1, of which David Todd Massey is the trustee, and I think it's Wilderness 2 that's the trustee is Marie Massey.
The reason that I asked that is one of the questions in this application is lot legality.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears that each of the lots were created approximately at the same time, and the parcel to the south did meet the 5-acre zoning minimum size at that time, and I was just wondering if Marie Massey was interested in having a unconditional certificate recorded on her deed so that it would be for all time clear the status of her lot.
Yes, she definitely would. I think the work we've done has involved both of them, and I think it's going to be pretty much the same for both.
And I also have the same question for Mr. Podolsky's property to the west. Your lot has clearly been approved for development by the issuance of a coastal permit and a building permit back in 1997. Are you interested in a unconditional certificate of compliance being recorded on your property to, for all time, make it clear the legality of your lot? Both of those items do not require public hearing in order to grant them, and the advertisement for this item is vague enough so that we could include that in the actions that we could take on this application.
That's so great. Thank you.
Okay.
We would appreciate him for that then. Being done.
There are comments you wanted to make?
Yes, Charlene Attic, attorney for the applicant. And let me just say they very much wanted to be here today. This has been continued a few times, and there's a 10-month-old baby that they keep getting seats together. But it's almost was more of an emotional issue for them at this point because this came as such a surprise to them that there would be any issue. Actually, going back in the history of these properties, they actually weren't purchased in the string, you know, by the same individual. They were sold separately, and they actually bought, you know, from a purchaser who bought them from two completely separate individuals, always paid taxes on them. Parcel legality, as we all know, is a little bit complicated, things that people don't look at. Matter of fact, the county many times has not, so it was quite a surprise and shock to them. I'd ask that, I was wondering if you received a fourth letter, September 14th, that I sent to Joan, and I CC'd you with it also by fax. September 14th, it's a short, I can't see that from
I'm sorry. It's a It says re Massey Certificate of Compliance 046241-43.
Is it dated September 14th?
Yes, it is.
Okay, then that's great.
In three pages?
Yes,
in
length. That's absolutely
yes.
Correct.
Yes. And I have that and have read it.
Okay, great. The issue in that is basically what is development. I think it's a very broad definition of development that we use. So when I would say that the county, the agricultural buffer permit, as well as the county approval of the water connections would be grants of approval under the county code, which is exactly the same as the subdivision map code, 14.01.109. And just to make sure we're absolutely clear on that, because it is a very confusing area, there's two different sections that allow a creation of a parcel or a parcel to qualify for an unconditional. The first requires that there be separate deeds or for each of the parcels before January 21st, 1972, and at the time of that creation, by deed, that the parcel in question meet, comply with all the provisions of the Subdivision Map Act and with all county ordinances, including minimum parcel size. And if you do find that the chain of title is sufficient, then you would look at that, whether it would comply with the county ordinances, and we might need a site variance, such as was granted Mr. Podaski. But there is also the second section under this that allows lots to be qualified for an unconditional certificate of compliance, and that is where there has been the issuance of a permit or grant of approval for development of the parcel in question, or by improvements that have been completed prior to the time a permit was required, or by improvements that have been completed in reliance upon a permit. And that third one I'm quite confused about, because I've never seen that quite apply where the other two don't, but it's in there. But that section does not require that it meet minimum lot size. Just as in Mr. Podaski's, a permit was granted, development actually occurred, he does not need to, because he would come clearly within two and not have to come within one. So with regard to the Mr. Massey's property, being less than the 5-acre minimum at the time of creation, we still qualify under that, because that is not one of the requirements. All we need is the grant of approval, and that leads us to our second section, is whether there was a grant of approval. And I don't think there's anything in the code, nor has the county issued a policy of where the grant of approval has to be for an actual building, or that you can go out there and construct a building. It's been far broader than that. Wells have been allowed, electrical permits, and doesn't even it states issuance of a permit. So it doesn't even require that the actual construction take place. It's quite broad, and I think it's meant to be broad because it's more of an estoppel theory. If the county's looked at this, if they've determined and the people have acted upon it, if we've all treated it as a parcel, an individual parcel, then, lo and behold, it's a little too late to say no. And I would hope that you would find that in this case. I did have provided you with health permits from the year prior to the time that the water main extension and connections were approved by the Mutual Water Company, and also along with that the list of connections, because it seems clear as though the county was approving it for connections. It's clear that there were domestic connections that were being approved with the fire hydrants, the size of the lines, and our separate discussions with the water company. And the lists of connections, all the lists we could find, and we keep finding more, and we'll go longer to keep looking for them, all include this lot, dash 43. I will grant you that some of the lists are not as complete as other lists. You find one connection on one list, and 5 years later you see it missing. These are very long lists. Internally, as Joan mentioned and pointed out to you, she did come up with one that seems to be, it's right at the same time, 97, 98, when these connections were being requested, that all three parcels show up on the approved list by the county under the environmental health. And this was directly related to the permits that were issued for those water connections. So I would think that we would come under that second section and qualify for an unconditional certificate of compliance. And we would greatly appreciate if at that time the other parcel, dash 42, Miguel's and also Dash 41 also receive unconditional certificates of compliance. If you are inclined not to think that the information provided to date suffices for unconditional, then I would ask for continuance to, because we've been pulling up pictures, health permits as of, I think, it's late yesterday. We would be more than happy to see what more we can find, more information. So I think there is probably more there is the rate we're finding it. So with that being said, unless you have any questions, I would just ask for the unconditional certificates of compliance to be granted.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I can tell you this has been a very interesting application to be involved in. I can also say the actual house and the proposal for that, I don't see any problem with. I don't see that it's inconsistent with our policies and so forth. The question does lie on, is this lot subject to an unconditional or a conditional certificate of compliance? And the framework that you're asking for the approval, that this lot is quote-unquote approved for development, is an unusual one, and one that I have not come across before in my years at the county. And it's something that is just a little bit unusual. It's not that you can pull out a well permit or an electric permit, as you said, or so forth. It's something that's a little bit further afield. I have received information, it seems like every day in the last week, with the last information coming in less than 24 hours ago. I'm mindful that this is a very serious decision that I need to make. There's a good deal of money on the line, depending on which way the decision is made. And I'm also mindful that there may indeed be additional information that can be found and submitted that would lead me to a decision. I really would like more time to review what has been submitted, and if there are additional materials that can be found and submitted, I would appreciate that and having some time to give this more thought than I have been able to do with the information coming in so late before the hearing. So I would like to continue this item to our next meeting. Again, to give me additional times to look over the information that has recently been submitted, and if you do find additional information, to review that. Our next meeting is on October 7th, and this would be the first item on the agenda. The public hearing stays open on this because I will be interested to hear of any additional information. In the meantime, you might want to confirm with Marie Massey that indeed she would be interested in having an unconditional certificate filed for her property one way or the other, because she does appear to qualify for one. Okay, in that case, that will conclude item number one.
Thank you.
Good morning, and welcome to the September 16th, 2005 Zoning Administrator Hearing. My name is Glenda Hill. I'm a Principal Planner with the Planning Department, and I am the Deputy Zoning Administrator for today's hearing. Before we get started, a couple housekeeping items. Is there anyone here in the audience for items 10 through 14? Anyone at all? Good, because those items will not be heard until after 1 p.m. I didn't want you to have to sit and wonder. Just to let you know what will be happening today, I will read the item of that's going to be heard into the record. The staff planner will make a presentation. Then we'll open the public hearing. The applicant will have 10 minutes to make a presentation. Anyone else who wants to speak will have 5 minutes, and then the applicant will have 5 minutes to rebut if he or she wants to do so. Then I will close the public hearing and we will make a decision. All decisions being made today are appealable to the Planning Commission. Some of the items are also appealable to the Coastal Commission. You should check your agenda if you have a question on whether an item is appealable to the Coastal Commission. I have been out to the sites for every item on the agenda that we'll be hearing today. And with that, we will go to our next item on the agenda, which is item number 2. Item number 2 is application 04-03-93, parcel number 4218125. It's a proposal to construct a single-family dwelling with two habitable floors above a non-habitable garage on a vacant parcel. It requires a coastal development permit, a variance to reduce the required 20-foot front yard setback to 0 feet, and to increase the maximum allowed number of stories within the urban service line from 2 stories to 3 stories in height. A geologic report review, a soils report review, a riparian exception, a biotic report review, and an archaeological site review, and a residential development permit for approval of a less than 40-foot right-of-way for access and the removal of one significant tree 20 inches in diameter. The property is located on the north end of Treasure Island Drive, approximately 275 feet northwest of the easement access to the intersection of Treasure Island Avenue and Aptos Beach Drive. The applicant is Laren Hurst. The owner is Lynn Morrell et al. It is in the second supervisorial district. The project planner is Randall Adams. And I would like to mention before he gives his presentation, this item has had a number of hearings in the past, and I did listen to all of the tapes of those hearings and reviewed previous materials from those hearings. With that, Mr. Adams, you have a staff report.
Good morning. This item was, as mentioned briefly, was heard at the May 20th, 2005 Zoning Administrator hearing, was continued for resolution of some items until June 3rd, 2005. At the June 3rd, 2005 hearing, the item was continued for three areas of concern regarding overall height of the structure, room labeling, and drainage. Just a brief summary, since this item's been heard before the zoning administrator in the past, is that this is a single-family dwelling. It's on a parcel in the Aptos area, Treasure Island Drive neighborhood. The site is constrained by a wetland pond area and also by steep slopes. The applicant has sought to find a balance between these constraints to be able to develop this existing lot with a single-family dwelling that's modest in size. The three areas that were raised at the prior zoning administrator hearing, the first being height. The applicant has redesigned the structure to comply with the 28-foot maximum height requirement. Room labeling was minor. There were two living rooms indicated in the house. County code only allows one. That has now been clarified. And there's only one living room on the upper level of the structure. Drainage was something that was more challenging, which is why this application has not come back until today's date. Since the wetland and the roadway drain differently at different times given topography. The applicant's actually now placed a drainage pipe that passes through the driveway that will allow that situation to balance out, and so access to the property would be possible without having vehicles and people having to pass through standing water. In review of the technical information, staff is recommending a couple of additional conditions. A condition Roman numeral 2B6, in that both the wetland impact evaluation and the biotic report review letter specify a wetland, permanent wetland fence. That's not clearly called out, and staff would like to add to that condition that a wetland fence be installed, be shown on the architectural plans, and be installed. And then staff would also recommend condition Roman numeral 2M. This is a new condition that it will read similar to the declaration regarding geologic hazards, that a biotic declaration, a declaration regarding development in an area of known biotic resources, be recorded as well. With that, staff recommends approval of this application, and that all of the issues previously raised have been addressed and other conditions have not changed, and the current recommendation stands for approval.
Thank you. Can you just briefly talk about the drainage and how you believe that this project will not be detrimental to drainage for this neighborhood?
Certainly. It's an interesting situation. First of all, the entire neighborhood is located in a floodplain. So in times of very large waterfall or very large water flows, the entire neighborhood may be inundated. This is actually at the upper edge of the floodplain, so it's less likely that this neighborhood particularly would be flooded by a flood event of Aptos Creek. However, there is a pond there that seems to be part of a previous natural drainage that may have been blocked off during the creation of the subdivision, and that the water leaving the site, it gets to a point where it ponds to a certain level and then it has to escape the site. Now, where the developer is proposing to put in a driveway, there was a challenge because there'd be standing water in that area. Now there's a pipe that will actually allow the pond to drain, so the pond level will actually stay a little bit lower, and then this water would travel out along Treasure Island Drive to Aptos Beach Drive. Now, what it won't be doing is it won't be resolving the current situation where Treasure Island Drive has a small drop in grade of approximately a foot from a crown before it gets to Aptos Beach Drive. So there may be some standing water there at times. Generally, it evaporates and does not enter other neighbors' homes and so forth. If that situation is to be rectified, staff does not feel it should be on the burden of the applicant, but it should be the neighborhood, since that's a private roadway and there is currently no maintenance agreement, that they should form an association and perhaps in repaving that roadway maybe adjust the grade there as well or put a swale in the middle. And it would not be a challenging engineering feat. It's just that it's something that that small neighborhood as a whole could get together and do.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is the applicant present and would like to address us? If you could state your name for the record, please.
My name is Laren Hurst, and I am the applicant. Randall did an excellent job kind of capturing, you know, all the issues. I'm here to answer any and all questions you might have or respond to any concerns that the neighbors might have.
Okay, so you had no questions about the staff report?
None at all.
Okay. I had a question. I've been out to the site and read the letters that have been submitted by neighbors, and there is, as everyone who lives in that area know, there is a house that's under construction that has caused a lot of misery for the neighbors, which is certainly not your fault whatsoever. But I think it has made the neighborhood hypersensitive to construction activities and the impacts it can have on their lives. I have two questions, one having to do with how are you going to manage construction vehicles at your building site during construction? And the second question is, are you going to build this yourself? Are you an owner-builder? Are you planning to work on the weekends? Or what kind of schedule do you have in mind there?
The first question kind of goes along with the second question, actually. So I'll answer the second one question first,
okay.
And that is we'll be using contractors, to a general contractor to handle the site, a reputable, licensed, and so on and so forth, insured. And with that being said, also there's going to be a fair amount of discussion to talk to them about keeping lanes open and access available to any neighbors that are going to be challenged by that. I would also say, though, that we're hoping to, this is not a very protracted experience, that we're going to try to keep this our construction window to be somewhat minimized. We're expecting 6 months at the outside. It's not a very large house. It's a fairly small, modest structure. And so I don't see a long, drawn-out process. Again, using a general contractor that this is what he does, and that's his main course of business. It's not incumbent upon, you know, it's not going to be me out there with the hammers and nails.
Okay, and what is your sense on days of construction, times of construction?
Probably going to be following just the usual and customary type of scheduling for days. I'm sure they're going to start at somewhere around 8 and knock off around 3:30, which is kind of the standard fare for the construction trades.
Okay.
Hopefully, obviously, there's going to be some issues with traffic and deliveries and that type of stuff. I don't want to try to say there's not going to be anything because we are going to have lumber and, you know, trucks, and there is going to be some traffic, there's no question about it, but we're going to try and certainly stay on top of that and to keep everyone mindful of the fact that, you know, we do exist here with a lot of other folks around. So one thing I can make a commitment to you and the neighbors is that there's going to be a lot of attention paid to that part of it, and certainly it would be one of my concerns as well.
Okay, thank you.
All right. One other thing, I think it would, I did notice a letter in there from Larry Revstein, and we did have a chance to meet. We had a number of communications back and forth, and I don't know if that copies of those need to be entered into the record or whatever, but if it's important.
Could you give a summary of...
conversation?
Yeah.
Essentially what it was Larry had some... concerns about drainage, and so what we did was discussed it. One thing I did was gave him a copy of the survey, both the survey of the site and also a survey of the street itself as it goes all the way out to Aptos Beach Drive or Boulevard there. And we talked about the plans that we have and so on and so forth. Hopefully I answered all his questions, but it was, I felt, a productive meeting. But at any rate, we did have some communication.
Okay, thank you. Well, we'll see if he's here and has concerns still. Okay,
thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this item? Anyone at all? Please come to the microphone and state your name, please.
Hi, my name is Larry Riefstein. I'm the party... who Mr. Hurston spoke with. We had a very cordial meeting. It looks like he's done his plan for a drainage pipe under the driveway. I don't know how sufficient 6 inches is for a pipe. I'm not in the construction business or engineering business. I have some slight concern still as to what the final height of the driveway will be. I know he has it designed slanted away from my house and towards his house, under which the pipe runs. But I'm not sure what the height of the edges of the driveway will be at the time of final construction. By the edges, I mean the north end edge, which is where the water will rise from the pond, excuse me, and the west end, which faces me. The driveway comes pretty close to my property line, and my property line is pretty darn close to my house. I have a very small space back there. I've lived there about 24 years. I think I came in 1981. I was there in the 82 flood. there were no fences or anything, so I had no idea where my property line at the time was. But the floodwaters never came into an area of about 25 feet, which I sort of assumed was my backyard space, that is, from my house to his construction site property line. The water always would flow back and forth into the from the pond on the north end into the street in the south end. About every 6 years, we have a nice large rain or a lot of waterfall, and the street in that area floods back there. Certainly was far from my house. Prior to Lauren Hurst purchasing said property, the previous owner, Patricia Taylor, I think the property is listed under the name Lynn Morin, brought in some landfill and filled in some of the gully of the waterway that used to be where the water had eroded and drained towards the street, and did some minor grading basically to take out vegetation, but the way they took it out was with a large scoop on a tractor, kind of leveling it, because if you're going to build a house or if you're going to sell a property to build a house, it's nice to have it flat and not in a gully. So it kind of leveled the playing field in a way, but it also leveled the possibilities of where excess water is going to run now. I have not sought any attorney or anything in this issue, but my concern is that in subsequent rainfalls, heavy wet seasons, where might this water run? It's possible that it will hit the edge of this driveway on a more level piece of land now, relatively level to mine. There's some less than a foot, but there's maybe a foot in variation. And I would not like to see water start to run off through my property, which it hasn't in the 24 years I've lived there, rendering my house and property valueless as a result of the new change of the direction of water flow. That's 95% of my concern, and I do agree with your earlier statement that it is my responsibility and association of the neighbors, including Mr. Hurst, that we build some sort of runoff ditch or something that leads down the alley, whose elevation has been changed because it was paved in the last year and a half, or repaved, excuse me. And I had that street, Treasure Island Drive, surveyed by an engineer 22 years ago maybe, and there was a 2% slope from our end to the street end where the drainage is, which is no longer the case. A second issue, which I haven't been able to calculate because it's been a long time since I've taken advanced math, is how much of my skyline will be blocked by the house, though Mr. Hurst has set his house as far away as is humanly possible from mine, but it goes up 28 feet, which is not really the top of the roof line. It's, I guess, the top of some flat line at the top of this house. You have a puzzled look.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
So in the summer, of course, there's a big hill with trees.
Yes.
If you can imagine that you're my house and I'm Mr. Hurst's house, that is, you're looking west right now. There's a big hill, so that in the summer, of course, the sun comes up, and Mr. Hurst's house could not possibly be as tall as that hill with its trees, so it would not be affecting any skyline I get. In fact, I don't get any skyline in my house mm-hmm. because of the trees. But in the wintertime, the arc of the sun, rather than coming up this way, comes up more this way, and the trees kind of dip down over on the southern side, and I do have some sky, even a little bit of sun. Not much that comes in then. I didn't know with his 28 feet plus a few feet for the roof point how much of that skyline would affect me. He has a drawing, a shadow line, mm-hmm. but that drawing, it's not that one. He was over at my house visiting. There's some study that shows the shadow.
The shadow plan.
Shadow line. The shadow lines are taking it, are depicted at unusual times, more like at noon rather than the at noon. Frankly, the sun is overhead for all our houses, and not really significant. So I was a little more concerned in the 9 o'clock in the morning to about noon
whatever the shadow line would be. Yeah. I tried roughly calculating it last night, but it's been a long time since I've had trigonometry, and radians are a little different than angles and what have you. And I'd like to look into that a little further, but that's not so significant an issue for me. The loss of skyline is loss of property value due to drainage.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this item?
My name is Lauren Spencer, and I represent the Morin family, the sellers of the property. And we've been in process for a year and a half now. And we feel that Laren Hurst has addressed really every concern of that community, and that he has been very responsive to the planning department and to the changes that they've recommended. And we are very much in favor of this being approved and having us all be able to move on with the project and the sale. So thank you very much.
Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, does the applicant want to make any final comments?
Yeah, just a couple of things. The obviously the drainage issue has been something that we've been discussing a fair amount, but just to speak to the size of the pipe, that was an engineer's design, and felt that it was adequate for what we were trying to achieve. The sewer pipe actually is about the same size, just a comparative thing. It could be an 8-inch pipe, but I think it's a 6-inch pipe. The whole idea behind that was to not change anything, to not try to impact the site any less or more than it already exists currently. And so that was the whole scope behind that. And the pipe actually allows the pond to get larger or smaller, and it kind of equalizes and balances things out. I certainly understand the shading issues. If it was my house, I'd certainly be concerned about that too. And one of the things that we did talk about when we were together, Mr. Epstein and myself, was possibly with the arborist's help doing some tree trimming and that type of thing on the upper side of the site, the trees that kind of shade everybody's in that valley, to help to mitigate some of those concerns. I don't think as you can see on the shading, the actual house itself is probably going to be of minimal impact to his home. His concerns are going to be more surrounding the trees that surround the site, that kind of block the sun, which I do understand, and I'd be more than happy to work with him on any and all aspects of that. So we're trying to, you know, speak to all the concerns and to be as sensitive and as good neighbors as possible in all areas. But I think that pretty much is it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing. I must admit, this was a challenging site. When I got to it, I went, wow, that's some site. However, there's been extensive studies done by numerous licensed professionals that show that the lot is buildable, a challenging site, but buildable. As to the shadowing, the shadow plan shows that there will be very minimal shading on adjacent properties, and the house has been redesigned to lower its height from its original proposal, so I don't see a concern with that. I am, as I said earlier, concerned about the neighborhood and impacts of construction on them. I am going to approve this application, and with the findings as presented, I do want to add additional condition under Roman numeral 4 operational conditions, number B, and that is that the hours of construction for this project would be limited to 8 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon, and hopefully by during, people will be coming home from work after that point, and there will be as little disturbance to them as possible. It's helpful to me to hear that this is not going to be an owner-builder project that will be going on for a number of years as you slowly build your house, but will indeed be built by contractors so that the construction time will be fairly short for a new house. So this application is approved with the amended conditions, and that concludes item number 2 on the agenda. Item number 3 is application 03-0539, APN 04617321. It's a proposal to recognize the replacement and a 6-foot extension of a second mid-story deck and replacement of a first-story deck, conversion of a carport to a garage, enclosed entry porch, and recognize other structural areas added to original single-family dwelling. It requires a coastal permit, variances to reduce the required 15-foot rear yard setback to about 5 feet, reduce the required 5-foot west side yard to about 4 feet, and to reduce the required 5-foot east side yard to about 3 feet, and to increase the maximum 40% lot coverage to about 49%, the floor area ratio from 50% to 64%, and a non-conforming structure determination. The property is located on the south side of Sunset Drive, about 200 feet southwest from Mesa Way at 58 Sunset Drive. The applicant is Ron Gordon. The owner is James and Deborah Bauer. It is within the second supervisorial district. The project planner is Joan Vanderhoven. And do you have a staff report?
Good morning. Yes, I do. To begin with, I have some administrative cleanup. In order to make the staff recommendations a little clearer, I added some language to the original permit so that we knew of all of the variance proposals, which things were to be specifically approved and which things were specifically to be recommended for not to be approved. So on page 4, the staff recommendation, staff is recommending approval of application number 03-0539 for the variance to the front setback, floor area ratio, and lot coverage, and denial of the variance to side and rear setbacks for deck expansions. That language is carried through in the variance findings on page 9 to add the sentence on the last paragraph, to add the last sentence to the first paragraph, under section 1 to say deck expansions in side and rear setbacks are to be demolished. And then on page 10, for the third variance finding, the last sentence to be added, unpermitted expansions to existing decks within side and rear setbacks are to be demolished. These suggested corrections have been given to the applicant and his attorney, Mr. Marshall. Excuse me. Thank you. Staff has received one item of correspondence on this, which I'd like to include to the record. It did come after we had duplicated the staff report. It's a letter that came in on September the 9th. From M.M. McNeely at 62 Sunset Drive in Watsonville. The letter states, the above matter is scheduled for public hearing on 9/16/05. Please be advised that I have an interest in the above matter as it relates to the extension of the second story deck. I have a view from my home that includes a landscape gully, trees, oceans, and sometimes waves on the beach. The extension has impacted my view. I have provided photographs of my living room historically before the deck extension, and recently, including the deck extension. I've also provided current photographs from my bedroom sitting area and deck to show the intrusion of my view. This not only diminishes my property value, but also has affected my enjoyment of this aspect of my property for the several years since the deck was enlarged. I have lived here for over 30 years and have gone through an extensive 2-year process to get a permit prior to changing my own deck with no increase in size many years ago. I can appreciate how exhausting it can be. While I would like to maintain the current amiable relationship with my neighbors, the Bowers, at the same time, I cannot help but comment on the impact on others when they arbitrarily enlarge their deck. I'm sorry to say that I would like to see the deck reduced back to the original size before the extension. I understand that the staff report recommendation that this is the staff report recommendation, and it can only hope that is the that this will be the determination at the hearing. Having waited several years since the deck was built for it to be removed, I hope that this will facilitate this being accomplished within the next 60 days rather than several more years. Thank you for your consideration, M.M. McNeely. Staff has not concluded included a specific time frame for the recommended removal of that deck extension. That 60 days consideration is something to be considered. Okay, so the project is located in the San Andreas planning area, adjacent to Sunset State Beach. The original house was constructed back in 1976. The site is adjacent to a small arroyo and about 500 feet distant from state parklands and is not visible from the beach due to steep topography of the coastline. The subject property is a 3,833 square foot lot located in the R16 single-family residential 6,000 square foot minimum parcel size zone district. That designation does allow zone residential uses. The proposed addition to an existing residence is a principal permitted use, and the project is consistent with the urban low residential general plan designation. The subject property at 3,833 square feet is less than the 80% of the R16 zone district and is a non-conforming lot as per County Code Section 1310.323D, subsection 2.1. The original development standards were consistent with the less than 60-foot frontage. The structure is also non-conforming to existing development standards and does require a variance to recognize the conversion of the existing carport to a garage, which reduces the front setback to 3.5 feet, where 20 feet is typically required. Because of steep topography at the site frontage, the original carport was approved under Building Permit 41071 as a 324-square-foot parking deck. The enclosure provides for weather protection, and there have been no detrimental safety concerns with the that reduced front setback because the traffic volumes are fairly low in the area, and the narrow width of Sunset Drive inhibits speeding. Staff has also added a condition, an operational condition on page 12 to kind of back that up, that the applicant have a this was in the original staff report, it's not being added right now, but just that an automatic garage door opener be installed and remain in good working order so that people aren't having to get out of the car to open up the doors, that garage door opener will let them get in and out of the garage without obstructing traffic flow along the street there. The property is developed with decks to access the house from the street and to provide for outdoor living space. The assessor's records indicate 272 square feet of decks. Decks have been repaired over the years and expanded, resulting, unfortunately, in the encroachment over the east side property line and encroaching into the front and rear setbacks. Building permit number 131811 allowed for the maintenance and repair of decks, but subsequent expansion of the decks without permits into the required setbacks and across property lines must be removed. Any encroachment onto adjacent properties shall be required to be demolished. No expansion of the original decks into required setbacks is permitted. Enclosure of the 84-square-foot entry porch was also completed with the garage enclosure in 1998, and this enclosure is consistent with property setback requirements. A declaration by the original property owner supports the existence of the two-bedroom, two-bath configuration on the three levels and the crow's nest with the dining area pop-out, which is Exhibit G. No change in the structural height is proposed. The project exceeds the 40% lot cover. Assessor's records indicate 1,479 square feet of main floor 84 square feet of enclosed porch, 272 square feet of decking, and 324 square feet of the carport. The original coastal development permit was not processed by the county, but rather by the California Coastal Commission. It predated current floor area ratio and lot coverage standards. Staff is not recommending any increase in the original lot coverage and that deck expansions be removed. The original coastal development permit, as I said earlier, was approved by the Central Coast Regional Coastal Zone Conservation Commission, permit P-1021, on November 18, 1974, and is attached as Exhibit H. The proposed recognition of conversion of the front porch addition and garage enclosure on the existing residence is in conformance with the county's certified local coastal program in that the structure is sited and designed to be visually compatible in scale with and integrated with the character of the surrounding neighborhood. The site is located between the shoreline and the first public road, but is not identified as a priority acquisition site in the county's local coastal program. The proposed project will not interfere with public access to the beach, ocean, or any other nearby body of water, as public coastal access is available at Sunset State Beach in the project vicinity. Environmental review has not been required for the project, as the project does qualify for a categorical exemption under Section 15301, existing facilities. As proposed and conditioned, the project is consistent with applicable codes and policies of the Zoning Ordinance and General Plan LCP, subject to the variance approvals. So staff is recommending approval of application number 03-539 based on the attached findings and conditions, and certification that the project is exempt from further environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act. This concludes staff's report.
Thank you. I have two questions. Is this project subject to a code compliance investigation?
It has been over the years, yes.
And still is?
With the submittal of the building plans and this, that should address the code compliance violations.
Okay. Yes, and the second question is, I want to make it very clear about what you're recommending approval of and what you're not recommending approval of. My understanding is you are recommending approval of the variances that would allow the garage conversion and the porch enclosure, which would be a reduction of the front yard setback, increase in the floor area ratio. Am I correct? You are not recommending a lot coverage variance increase. And you are not recommending the side and rear yard setback reductions for the decks. Is that correct?
For any deck extensions, obviously the decks are needed for the people to get to the house.
Yes.
So they need some of the decks. But the rear extension, the rear 6-foot extension, was the most offensive detail to the neighborhood. And it was not possible for staff to make findings for variance for that extension into the rear setback.
So you are recommending approval of the lot coverage variance?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay. I just want to say on page 3 of your staff report, at the very bottom paragraph, you state, staff is not recommending any increase in the original lot coverage.
Right.
It just has me a bit confused.
I'm sorry. The things that's to cover the things that were permitted,
okay.
not any construction that was done without benefit of permit subsequent to that, to those approvals.
Okay. So I'm sorry. So you're saying that you are or are not recommending at this time a variance for lot coverage?
I see what you're saying here. Yes, the lot is tiny. It's only 3,800, so it does need a variance for the lot coverage. But to the extent that the existing development is out there, I wouldn't go as far as to recommend approval for everything that's been constructed.
Okay. So the sentence on page 3 of the staff report is a bit misleading. Then, when you say that you're not recommending any increase in lot coverage, indeed you are.
Right.
Okay. Just wanted to make that clear, because it was a little bit inconsistent, it seemed to me, in reading it. Thank you. Okay, this is a public hearing. The applicant has 10 minutes to address the item. Please step forward and state your name for the record.
Good morning. Doug Marshall here, appearing on behalf of the applicant and owner. We've reviewed this in some detail, and to make a long story short, we accept the conditions set forth in the staff report. We have also received the changes that were made in the staff report. They're consistent, as we see it, with the original staff report. We understand the need for clarification, and that too is understood. The neighbor was kind enough also to drop off a letter regarding the application. We reviewed it. It was read into the record and understand those concerns. So after a lot of review and examination, we find it to be acceptable. Ron Gordon is here. He was involved in some of the technical issues. So if you have any questions, he could jump into those. Jim Bauer is here as well. If you have any questions, we'd be glad to answer them. But that concludes my comments. Thank you much.
Excuse me, might I just add, Mr. Marshall, I wanted to thank you for making the affidavits available to us, because we had quite a time trying to get the history of the property, and without that information we would have been unable to move forward to hearing today, so thank you for making that available.
You're welcome.
And may I also ask, you understand that the staff recommendation is for some of the variances to be denied. Are you saying that your applicant is not protesting that or trying to have that overturned?
I am saying that. What we understand is the expansion that has to be removed, and it's addressed in some detail in the staff report and shown on the plans. And we understand that.
Okay.
So that decking. I understood your question on the lot coverage, although I don't really know what the numbers are. Perhaps that's something for Ron Gordon to deal with if you have more questions. We do know that the garage was a conversion from a carport to a garage. I don't know how that might affect the lot coverage issue. I leave it alone, but we accept what has been set forth in the permit conditions. So I think that makes sense, although I don't really understand the numbers for the lot coverage.
Okay. And just to answer your question, when you have an existing carport and you convert it to a garage, as long as you're not increasing its footprint, it does not change the lot coverage.
Okay. Okay, real good. I guess the other area, Glenda, is the porch.
Yes.
And the porch was enclosed. That too doesn't change the lot coverage, because the footprint hasn't changed.
No, it's the second story deck that went put you over the lot coverage.
Is that it?
And there was a slight encroachment onto the east side property.
Yes.
Well, oh, yeah. And right, then the encroachments also have to be removed. We understand, you know, as another issue that also, we understand that and accept it. But that was part of the computation for the square footage?
Yes. Just to let you know, for lot coverage, any deck over 18 inches counts in lot coverage unless it is unenclosed, uncovered, and cantilevered.
Right, right. Okay. Very good.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this item? If so, come forward. Anyone at all? In that case, I will close the public hearing. I agree with staff's recommendation on the variances requested, and I agree that the variances that are not being recommended are appropriate. I would, however, like to add something to the variance findings for this item. And that would be for variance finding number one, I would like to add to the end of that that there are no special circumstances to warrant retention of the deck expansions to the rear. And under variance finding number 3, I'd like to add to the findings, retention of the deck expansions would be a grant of special privilege in that a portion of the deck encroaches onto a neighboring property. Also, although not a condition of this permit, I would like to direct staff to inform the code compliance section of the planning department of the action today so they can update their records and are aware of what's happening on this property. Yes?
May I address one other issue if I could?
Sure.
It's simply a clarification. We possibly weren't listening real carefully when you read the description of the project.
Yes.
And we heard you mention 6 feet somewhere, at least that's what we thought. And I am looking at the project description. I guess you're looking at the top of the staff report, mm-hmm. and I guess we were confused with permits required. Were you reading the project description as it's shown in the staff report?
I was reading the project description as advertised.
Okay, and does that also conform with the project description in the staff report?
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
Thank you much.
Okay. So with...
Sorry, Dr. Bauer, would you mind...
So with that, we have approved some of the variances. We have denied some of the variances outlined by staff, and that concludes item number 3. Give us just a moment, get ready for the next item. Item number 4 is application 05-0052. The APN is 10913102. It's a proposal to maintain a farm labor housing unit, to change the use of an existing single-family dwelling to a farm labor housing unit, and to recognize a 739-square-foot addition to an existing single-family dwelling on site with a detached barn, detached garage, and detached storage building. Requires an agricultural development permit and an agricultural buffer determination. The property is located on the west side of Green Valley Road at 1275 Green Valley Road, at approximately half a mile north of the intersection with Wheelock Road in Watsonville. The applicant is Ron Gordon. The owner is Joseph Morris. It's in the second supervisorial district, and the project planner is Joan Vanderhoven.
Thank you. This development proposal was previously approved as application number 01-0158 on March 15, 2002, but was not exercised as no building permits were obtained. The project was reviewed for a second time by the County Agricultural Policy Advisory Commission back in April 21st of this year for an agricultural buffer determination. The project is located in the Eureka Canyon planning area. The parcel is characterized by gently sloping topography to the southeast. The 64.57-acre parcel is developed with an apple orchard and a single-family dwelling, two farm workers' quarters, and miscellaneous outbuildings to support on-site agricultural operations. The two farm worker units closest to Green Valley Road and furthest away from Green Valley Road, on pages 38 and 40 of the APEC staff report, were constructed prior to zoning and building regulations back in 1955 and 1937, respectively. The center building was originally permitted as a caretaker's mobile home back in 1984. That unit sustained damage during the 1989 earthquake, and the owners obtained an emergency earthquake permit to place a permanent foundation under the mobile home, thereby granting this unit permanent status. A 739-square-foot addition was added to the structure without permits. The structure is proposed to be converted to a single-family dwelling. One single-family dwelling is permitted in the CA zone district as per County Code 1310.312. The two farm workers' quarters are consistent with the County Code Section 1310.631 in that the 64.5-acre parcel can sustain the density requirement of a minimum of 20 arable acres of farmland per unit, and neither of the structures exceed the 1,500-square-foot size limit. A reduction in the required agricultural buffer was determined appropriate by the Agricultural Policy Advisory Commission based on the establishment of a vegetative buffer adjacent to the residential development, as shown in Exhibit E. The applicant has recorded an agricultural statement of acknowledgement to protect adjacent farm interests. The proposal is also consistent with the general plan agriculture designation, as the buildings are clustered in an area on the perimeter of the property consistent with general plan policy 5.13.27 to preserve as much of the farmland available as possible for the existing apple orchard and to not negatively impact existing adjacent agricultural operations. The farm worker housing provides necessary housing for employees of the farm operation. Environmental review has not been required for the proposed project per the requirements of CEQA, as the project qualifies for a categorical exemption as per Section 15301, existing facilities. Staff has not received any communications from the public on this project and is recommending approval of application number 05-0052 based on the attached findings and conditions and certification that the project is exempt from further environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act. This concludes staff's report.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is the applicant here and would like to address the zoning administrator?
I'm Ron Gordon, representing the Morris family. I'd also like to explain why the original application wasn't exercised. After the permit was approved, one of the owners passed away, and consequently, nobody followed up on it. And I had just assumed that they had taken care of it because all that was needed was a special inspection or to call for a final. So here we are doing it all over again with a few more dollars expense. So if I can answer any additional questions. So
you've read the staff report and have no concerns, questions?
Essentially, it's the same staff report as approved last time.
Okay.
No problem.
Thank you.
Well, I'll just make sure it gets done this time.
That would be good. Is there anyone else who would like to address this item? No one? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. I'm going to approve this application with staff findings and conditions, and let's hope that it gets done this time. We don't see you again. That concludes item number 4.
Mr. Gordon, would you sign the permit, please?
Item number 5 is application 040357,
APN 046031-19. It's a proposal to construct a second-story room addition to an existing single-family dwelling. Requires a coastal development permit and an agricultural buffer determination. The property is located in an unnamed right-of-way, about 360 feet north from Springview Road off Spring Valley Road at 177 Springview Road in Watsonville. The applicant and owner are Timothy and Linda Kessler. It's in the second supervisorial district. Joan Vanderhoven is the staff planner.
Thank you. This application was submitted to the Planning Department back in July of 2004 and deemed complete on April 4, 2005. The project has been reviewed by the Santa Cruz County Agricultural Policy Advisory Commission in April of 2005, and an agricultural buffer determination was approved for the project. The project is located in the San Andreas planning area, and the immediate vicinity is developed with low-density residential development constructed back in the 1970s, adjacent to larger commercial agricultural operations. The subject property is developed with a single-family dwelling. The dwelling is 1,088 square feet and a small avocado orchard. The subject property is a 1.057-acre lot located in the CA Zone District, a designation which allows residential uses. The proposed addition to the existing residence is a permitted use within the Zone District, and the project is consistent with all development regulations other than the agricultural buffer setback. The proposed addition to the existing residence is in conformance with the County Certified Local Coastal Program in that the structure is sited and designed to be visually compatible in scale and integrated with the character of the surrounding neighborhood. The project site is not located between the shoreline and the first public road and is not identified as a priority acquisition site in the coastal program and will not have any interference at all with public access to the beach. The project basically develops the underfloor level, so it will be doubling the size of the house. The foundation storage area of 1,088 square feet will be made habitable, and a little extra decking will be there. The existing lot coverage is 4.5%, just going up to 5%, so it is consistent with all development regulations for the zone district. Staff has not received communications on this, other than a phone inquiry from a neighbor who was just interested in it, if there were any increase in the building footprint, and that was the extent of her inquiry. So staff is recommending approval of application number 04-357 based on the attached findings and conditions and certification that the proposal is exempt from further environmental review under CEQA.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is the applicant here and would like to address the zoning administrator? You have no comments you want to make? Okay. Is there anyone else here that would like to address this item? Item number five. Anyone? Okay. In that case, I will close the public hearing. I've been to the site, reviewed the staff report, and I agree with staff, and I am going to approve this application with staff findings and conditions. And that concludes item number five. Item number six is application 050086.
APN 052-321-34. It is a proposal to construct additions of approximately 636 square feet at three levels on an existing single-family dwelling and to obtain a certificate of correction to adjust the designated building envelope with no increase in size of the building envelope. It requires a coastal development permit, minor variation. Property is located on the west side of Cormorant Lane, about 700 feet west of Rio Boco, 123 Cormorant Lane in Pajaro Dunes. The applicant is David Huboy, owner William and Christine Goodman. It's in the second supervisorial district. The project planner is Joan Vanderhoven. And I apologize in advance for any mispronunciations of names on that. Joan, do you have a staff report?
Thank you. Yes, I do. To begin with, the architect, Mr. Huboy, is here and did bring a photo rendering of the Goodman residence, which is on display over here, the colored photograph, a couple of the elevations. This 2,264 square foot residence was constructed under building permit number 35772, issued back in August the 21st of 1973, 30 years ago. The project is located at Pajaro Dunes South, a 262 residential planned unit development structure, permitted under 74-400 PUD on 2-2875. The project is adjacent to the Shorebirds Community Building and parking lot. It's an interior lot, three rows in from the coastline. The subject property is a 10,105.9 square foot lot located in the SU, Special Use Zone District, a designation that allows residential uses. The proposed 604 square foot addition to the existing residence is an allowed use and is consistent with the urban low density residential general plan designation. The addition includes replacement of the exterior fencing with a rock wall, addition of a bedroom on the lower level, expansion of the bed bathroom on the second level, a new entry, and addition of a greenhouse and deck area on the upper level. A survey was completed to confirm the 50 by 50 building envelope, and with the certificate of correction recorded, the project would be consistent with development regulations of the PUD requiring development to be contained within the designated building envelope and all other site standards. The Pajaro Dunes Design Committee has reviewed and approved the development proposal that's attached as Exhibit G. The proposed addition to the existing residence is in conformance with the County Certified Local Coastal Program and that the structure is sited and designed to be compatible in scale and integrated with the character of the surrounding neighborhood. The project site is located between the shoreline and the first public road. However, it is not identified as a priority acquisition site in the county's local coastal program. Consequently, the proposed project will not interfere with public access to the beach, ocean, or other nearby body of water, as fee-supported public access is available at Palm State Beach in the vicinity. The project is subject to design review and with site and architectural design features such as the use of neutral earth tone colors and natural materials. The project is consistent with our ordinance. Environmental review has not been required for the project as per Section 15301, as this is an existing facility. Staff has not received any communications on this project and is recommending approval of application 05-0086 based on the attached findings and conditions and certification that the proposal is exempt from further environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act. This concludes staff's report.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is the applicant or owner here and like to address the zoning administrator?
Hi, good morning. I'm David Huboy, architect. I represent the homeowners, Bill and Christine Goodman. And we've been working with the Pajaro Dunes Homeowners Association on this project and the adjoining neighbors on adjusting the building allowable building envelope. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
You've read the staff report. Do you have any concerns with it or questions?
Just a couple of comments on the conditions. There was one comment relating to providing a topographic, civil topographic map that since we're the existing, although we're not increasing the existing height of structure, we were able to utilize a civil engineering topographic map that was provided by the Homeowners Association by Bowman and Williams and show the existing contours. We're not proposing any new grading, so I'm proposing to utilize that topographic map that was provided by the Homeowners Association and would be happy to indicate on that map a roof plan that would indicate spot elevations and hopefully that would conform to that condition. The other, there was another comment about a soils report. I haven't been able to get a soils report from as of yet from the Homeowners Association. It's a minor, very minor addition. I did get a as-built plans that indicate conventional footings. So what I'm proposing, providing that it would be acceptable with the building department to utilize to design the new footing per the minimum allowable UBC, Uniform Building Code requirements. And other than that, I really don't have any other any comments.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to address this item? Item number 6, anyone at all? Okay, in that case, I'll close the public hearing. I have been out to the site, and I do concur with the staff recommendation, findings, and conditions. As to your request about condition Roman numeral 2, number 3, concerning the requirement for the additional information on the height, I'm going to go ahead and delete that condition, which is item number 2, number 3. I think you'll have sufficient information to be able to prove that you're fine for your height. However, the requirement for the soils report, I am not going to waive that. I'm going to keep that condition as stated. I think it's appropriate considering the area and the type of soil that you're on. So with those changes, your application is approved. And that concludes item number 6.
Do I need to be getting another staff member?
We'll have a moment before we move on to the next item so that the project planner can arrive and be here to give the presentation.
Thank you.
Okay.
Go on.
Okay, moving on to item number 7. Item number 7 is application 05-0184. The APN is 039-351-26. The proposal is to remodel and construct an addition to an existing non-conforming one-story single-family dwelling. Requires a variance to reduce the double frontage front yard setback from Sandbrook Lane from 20 feet to 10 feet. The property is located on Mar Vista Drive, about 100 feet north of Soquel Drive at 3025 Mar Vista Drive. The applicant, excuse me, is Mike Aliberti Construction. The owner is Michael Medina. It is in the second supervisorial district. And the project planner is David Keon.
Good morning, Glenda. This application is for a variance to a setback from Sandbrook Lane. This is a double frontage setback. Essentially, this property is a very wide, with wide property with a very narrow depth with two right-of-ways on either side of it. For this reason, there are two, and because there are two right-of-ways on either side, there are two front yard setbacks from both sides. This creates a special circumstance to the property, which limits the location of any future addition to the existing single-family house. This is also further limited by topography on the site, which is quite steep and has resulted in the owner placing a number of retaining walls on the site, limiting the amount of the developable area. For this reason, these are considered to be special circumstances, and staff is recommending approval of the requested variance. There is essentially, due to the fact this is only an addition to increase the size of the master bedroom, reconfigure the interior, there will be no net addition to the number of bedrooms, so there will be no additional move fees in terms of number of bedrooms. Staff is recommending that the zoning administrator approve application number 050184 and certify the extension of the California Environmental Quality Act.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is the applicant or owner for this item present and would like to address the zoning administrator?
Hi, I'm the applicant, Mike Aliberti, and I just wanted to, you know, reiterate that the rear setback that originally this lot was a single lot, which was divided at one point, but it fronted Soquel, and the added Sandbrook Lane. One of the reasons that we asked for the variance was because the adjacent parcels were all built with a 10-foot setback, so this wouldn't really, you know, we were hoping that this wouldn't impact anything else. That's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to address this item? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. I didn't really focus on why this variance was appropriate until I actually went out to the site and saw the existing improvements. On paper, it looked a little bit dicey. But once I got out to the site and saw the existing improvements, saw the extensive retaining walls and so forth, it made sense to me why variance was being requested on this. I do want to mention that on the plans there is an existing parking area along Mar Vista that is very, very close to the property line of Mar Vista, and there was some question in my mind whether or not this parking area and the house were attached, therefore making this a significantly non-conforming structure and subject to additional review and findings. In part of my research and in discussing with the project planner, I discovered that we have a contradiction in our county code between the definitions of detached and attached. And under one definition, this is a significantly nonconforming structure, and under the other definition, it is not, which is certainly not your fault. It is a problem with the county code, and it will be noted for something that needs correction. When we have such a contradiction as this, and I see no particular danger to health, safety, or welfare for this project in that it's not near at all to the area that is non-conforming. We're going to go with the definition that shows that you are not significantly non-conforming. Again, it's something that we as staff will need to propose to the Board of Supervisors to correct our internal inconsistency in our code. Just wanted to get that onto the record in case there's any question in the future as to why we weren't considering it to be a significantly non-conforming structure. With that, I do agree with the staff findings and conditions for this project, and I am approving it. And that concludes item number 7.
I could do that, or, well, okay.
Do I have to sign this? You sent me 2 copies of this?
Yeah, you do. You could sign this, and then you have to record the conditions anyhow, so, yeah.
Item number 8 is application 04-0508, APN number 138-172-33. It's a proposal to demolish an existing single-family dwelling and construct a new two-story single-family dwelling of about 2,400 square feet with 3 bedrooms, 3 baths, and a 1-car garage. It requires a coastal development permit. The property is located on Seacliff Drive, about 1,000 feet west of the intersection of Seacliff Drive and Mar Vista Drive at 542 Seacliff Drive. The applicant is Winston Whitaker for the owner, Brian and Mary Louise Bauer. It is in the 2nd Supervisorial District. The project planner is David Keon.
Good morning, Egan and Glenda. Just some late additions. For one, I just want to mention that the applicant, Winston Whitaker, has changed the designation of the living room on the lower level, first floor, to family room, and has changed on the floor plans for the second story from family room to living room in order to be keeping in conformance with county code, and so that this will only result in an increase of 1 additional bedroom for the purpose of any movies parking. Now, I have also received a letter from a neighbor, Miss Betty Benson. She lives at 529 Middlefield Drive, which is the neighbor to the rear of the subject property. And this, her primary concerns were drainage on site, existing currently, actually drainage in the neighborhood, not necessarily on site. Here it is. And this is, apparently there's an underground pipe that runs from Middlefield Drive to Seacliff, and the exact location of this pipe is not known, but essentially this pipe is not in a good enough condition and is resulting in flooding in some along some properties. I have asked staff on drainage to investigate this, and they have come up with additional conditions of approval to address this issue. However, if this pipe is not located on the subject property, then this will not address the condition. And these are from comments from Allison Tom. These would be addition conditions of approval. Condition of approval 2B3C should be added, which will read, provide an analysis determining the extent of the upstream area draining to the property via surface flow and how these flows will be accommodated. If solid pipes are used to accommodate these flows, provide details and analysis of the proposed outlet and downstream path. an additional condition of approval 2B3D, provide details on any pipe on site serving upstream properties, including drainage areas served, condition, capacity, location, etc. Also note the presence of any drainage easements on the site, and also add the caveat that repairs to this pipe on site may be necessary. And this is to address Allison Tom's concerns. In terms of other issues, this adequate parking will be provided on site, and in terms of neighborhood compatibility, the neighborhood is in a period of transition. There are a number of two-story homes on Meadowfield, and there are a number of two-story homes down the street from the subject property on Seacliff. And for this reason, this is in neighborhood in transition, so the two-story residents will not be out of place. Staff is recommending approval of application number 040508 with the amended plans, amended conditions of approval, and subject to the attached findings, and also certification of the exemption to the California Environmental Quality Act.
Thank you. I just want to clarify for the record, under your conditions of approval, one of your conditions, specifically Roman numeral 2B2, is that the maximum floor area ratio for this project will be a maximum of 50%, which is the maximum allowed by the zone district,
yes,
and that plans drawn to an appropriate scale with accurate dimensions will be submitted as part of the building permit.
Yes.
That's correct. Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is the applicant or owner present and would like to address this item?
Yes, I am, Madam Commissioner. And, I'm Incident George Whitaker, and I wanted to just say thank you for bearing with us through this process. First, let me address the, I was asked by staff to conduct some visitation and look at the pipe drainage situation on site. I went out yesterday, as a matter of fact, with a contractor, and I do have in my possession a full survey of the area and our specific parcel, and the two pipes in that could be in question on the sides of the property are not on our property. They're on the neighbor's property by virtue of the pins and the location of the pins and the property boundary lines. And the surveys clearly show that. And so we'll be happy to submit copies of that survey map to staff to mitigate or answer any concerns regarding
us. Yes, that would be helpful.
I don't know that I have an extra copy today, but I can furnish that at my earliest possible date. Second item is in regards to the 50% floor area ratio. It is our intention to not exceed that, and I want to pardon the at times in my own practice over the years, based in New York and having to do buildings all over the world, I do a lot of my blueprint copying not at blueprinters, because most of them close operate between 9 to 5. So I do make my copies at the Kinko's or the black and white copies centers. As you can see, they do offer much more clarity. However, unfortunately, at times the dragging process of the copying process exaggerates some of the lines. And so, yes, we will provide full-scaled, proper dimension plans to mitigate any concerns that we're going to be inches or so away from the 50% floor area coverage.
Okay. I just wanted to ask Mr. Keon, with the information now that you've heard that these pipes are indeed not on the subject property, does that change your recommendation, conditions, or anything else?
I think that the conditions that this would satisfy, these information would need to be submitted at the building permit stage as part of these conditions to drainage, and we need to be submitted, provided to drainage, to show that the pipe is not on the property. Basically, the condition is providing details of any pipe on site serving the upstream properties. If you show details that the pipe is not on site and that's clearly to your drainage satisfaction, then that would satisfy that concern. But I think
we'll be happy to do that.
Okay.
And Winston, I'm going to give you a bit of a lecture. When I was reviewing your plans, obviously the house is built to maximize the amount of floor area ratio, which you have a right to do under our site regulations, but because the plans were not absolutely to scale, it took me quite a while to see if indeed you were under, over, or what, and I would hope in the future that you will turn in plans to scale. For one thing, as you know, the more time it takes us to review plans, the more it costs your clients. And hopefully you will make it easy on them and on staff in the future by turning in plans that are very easy to calculate the floor area ratio for.
Absolutely. Okay. I appreciate the attention to it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this item?
I'm sorry. I'm the neighbor, Betty
okay.
Benson.
All right.
And I took the opportunity to take some pictures, okay, of the area and the concerned drainage that I'm... As you can see on picture one, that's the drain pipe that's supposed to suffice all the excess water. That's the beginning of it, and that's at the beginning of my property and Middlefield. Millbrook Drive, I have it cleaned out every year, you know, so the flow would go through, but the pipe is damaged now, I gather, with age. And I don't feel it's adequate for the area with all our two-story homes and the streets and the amount of traffic we're getting now. Some better form of drainage need to be derived at, because there is a 2% grade, you know, coming down off the hill, you know, downgrade, and from the neighbor from the street above me and 2% into the area that's proposed to be built. On page two, I gather that's my backyard, and you're saying that the pipe is not going on to the neighbor's property. I don't know where the property line's at, but I just took a diagonal line, you know, to try to indicate where this coming out, the other pipe is coming out for the drainage on Seacliff. And page three shows the, the exit of the drainage, and that's on the proposed property. Now, I'm sorry, but I am not clear how they're intent on handling this, but the pipe needs fixing because it floods my yard and my neighbor's yard every winter, and where we're going to have it fixed, I've even hired a civil engineer to come out and give us some suggestions on what to do with that. You'll have to brief me on what your proposal are to maintain this.
Could I ask Mr. Camp to answer the lady's concerns about the drainage?
Essentially, with these added conditions, if this pipe does turn out to be on their site, then they would have to take care of any portions of that pipe that are on their site, because they have to take care of drainage that comes off of upstream sites onto their site, and they have to have a drainage plan that mitigates that. Now, if this pipe does not, if the portion of the pipe that is damaged is not on these people's properties, then we have no authority to make them repair the pipe.
I realize that it's my responsibility to repair the pipe, but mm-hmm. where am I going to access the water? It will go on to their property, if you can see, and then I will have a civil lawsuit for dumping water onto their property mm-hmm. when we need to take care of it now while they're reconstructing, just run the pipe underground to Seacliff or whatever. We've mm-hmm. got to make a decision on how to handle it.
Then that would be a civil issue between you and the neighbors on Seacliff. So it would be basically a civil issue if you're going to create a new easement, if you want to create, redo it, and create it, you'd have to all form a drainage easement between either the neighbors of this property or the neighbors immediately to the south. So basically,
I am dealing with it as a from a civil engineer mm-hmm. aspect now.
Well, I mean, civil.
But I know you're talking about a civil issue if we get to suit, but I mean lawsuit or complaint. But it's not clear. The pipe, we either try to dig this existing pipe up, which has been there since, I don't know what, 1927 or whenever you subdivided the area, or either run a new pipe alongside of the existing pipe, which will go directly through my property and straight back into the proposed backyard mm-hmm. of the new It's not clear to me of how it's going to be done.
If I could ask Mr. Whitaker to come forward, perhaps he can help explain this to her.
Again,
if you get close up to the to the microphone, I'd appreciate it.
Go ahead.
Again, it seems like from the neighbor's presentation that there are some question marks as to where exactly the pipe is. and I want to, in representing my clients, I want to be clear that whatever runoffs or drainage conditions that we have to satisfy on behalf of Public Works, and I've discussed the matter with Allison, we will be happy to satisfy. We also have already declared in our findings based on survey that neither of the two pipes that are filtering out on the properties down on Seacliff is currently running under the Boyer's land. And so with that concern, we have no vested interest in those pipes at the moment. However, if in fact a new situation would develop, I'd have to represent to the owners that the neighbor above them, in your case, would want to negotiate some type of right-of-way or easement crossing to the property. I'm sure they wouldn't be adverse to such a thing, but at this point, to hold them culprit and responsible for the pipe which is in question is sort of, I would say, a moot point or out of our hands, so to speak, until it's proven that we are directly responsible for any part of that pipe.
I just want an easement or whatever to eliminate the excess water from my property as well as my neighbor's property, because that is a neighborhood.
Well, I'll be happy to present that to the owners, and I agree with you that while we're doing construction, if it can come on to our site, we're going to do a tremendous amount of earthwork to provide the home and the mitigation of the water damage. I'm sure I will explain that sensibly to the owners, that that's a possibility and that you guys can open some dialogue on that.
If you need, you can, I don't know, but you have your own pictures?
Yes, we do. And,
okay, fine.
No, I appreciate if you want to give me a copy of any of this stuff, I'd be happy to take it back to the owners.
If you have it, then you don't need a copy.
Oh, well, yeah. No, they have their, okay, their own findings.
Did you have other comments on this item?
No, I just need an easement, you know.
I understand.
For the runoff, because we would like to fix our pipe this as soon as possible, but if it's going to run into theirs and cause problems, then that's stalling our construction.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to address this item? Mr. Whitaker, did you want to rebut or make any additional comments
before I
close the public hearing?
I think, Madam Commissioner, what I said before is to my standings fair to both parties. I'm not aware of their conditions up above. I haven't done any investigation on that. If there is, in fact, the need for an easement onto my client's property, I am certain they are, they have all been in the neighborhood a long time. They all know each other. I'm sure it won't be a problem of them negotiating or helping along in those lines. And yes, the time to do it is when we are under construction. I do agree with that, and I have no problems with that at all.
Okay, thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing, and I am going to approve this application as submitted. I do want to make a change to development permit finding number 3. And that would be the third paragraph of development permit finding number 3. First sentence. And I will read what it says. The proposed single-family dwelling will not be improperly proportioned to the parcel size or the character of the neighborhood as specified in General Plan Policy 8.6.1, maintaining a relationship between structure and parcel sizes as the replacement single-family dwelling. And the change I'm going to put in is the words, as conditioned, will comply with the site standards and so forth of that sentence. So the change is the phrase as conditioned. As to the drainage, these pipes appear not to be on this person's property based on a survey. I hope as neighbors you two can talk about getting a drainage easement put together. I am not going to require that as a condition of this permit because there is not a nexus between your drainage problems and their permit, but I hope informally outside of the hearing process that you two can work together and hopefully a drainage easement can be provided and to help you with your drainage problems.
Can I ask a question?
You may.
Okay, fine.
If you could come to the microphone, please.
Oh, sure. Okay, I realize this is a problem between myself and the neighbor.
Yes.
But when will the county go through and put in proper drainage sewage along that street? Since that is a county maintained area, the streets and everything.
The county adopts a what's called a capital improvement program. Mm-hmm. Actually, the Board of Supervisors does each year that lists all the projects that the county will be dealing with, including drainage projects.
Mm-hmm.
Lists them for a 5-year future
projection,
and you can certainly speak to the Department of Public Works to find out if this area is on that 5-year list, and if it is not, you can certainly recommend each year they have public hearings on the capital improvement program and what things should be included. And if it's not on there, you can certainly contact your supervisor and let it be known that you wish that would be on the list. I don't know if it is or is not. You can certainly check
I'll
on that.
Go down and check.
Okay.
So, okay, fine. Thank you.
You're welcome. So that concludes item number 8. Again, I have approved that with revised findings and the conditions as revised and submitted by staff at the hearing. Item number 9 and our last item of the morning agenda is application 05-0191 is APN 046-061-74. It is a proposal to construct a two-story addition of about 370 square feet to an existing single-family dwelling. It requires a coastal development permit and an agricultural buffer reduction to 20 feet. The property is located on a driveway off of the end of Linda Vista Drive, about 500 feet west of Sandaler Drive at 600 Linda Vista Drive. The applicant is James Lloyd Design for the owner, Dennis Jeffrey Keith. It is in the second supervisorial district, and David Keon is the staff planner.
Good morning again. This application required an agricultural buffer reduction from 200 feet to 20 feet in order to accommodate the addition in line with the existing house, and this is approved by the Agricultural Policy Advisory Commission at their July 14th hearing. There is no other major issues with this. Essentially, it conforms to the architectural style of the house and the neighborhood, and staff is recommending that the zoning administrator approve this application, number 050191, and certify the exemption to the California Environmental Quality Act.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is the applicant or owner present and would like to address the zoning administrator? No questions. You've read the staff report. Don't have any concerns, questions? Okay. And since there is no one else in the room, I will close the public hearing. I have been to the site. I've read the staff report. I agree with staff, and I am going to approve this application with staff findings and staff conditions. And that concludes item number 9 and the morning agenda. Good afternoon, and welcome to the afternoon session of the September 16, 2005 Zoning Administrator Hearing. Before we start on item 10, a few housekeeping items. Just to let you know that I have visited all the sites that are on the agenda today. Any decision made today is appealable to the Planning Commission. Certain decisions are appealable to the Coastal Commission, and please check your agenda for which ones are appealable to the Coastal Commission. How we will be handling each hearing is I will read the item description first, then the staff planner will make a presentation. At that point, I will open the public hearing. The applicant or owner will have 10 minutes to address us if they desire to. Anyone else then will have 5 minutes to address the zoning administrator. The applicant and owner then has 5 minutes to rebut or final comments, at which case I will close the public hearing and render a decision. So that's how it's going to be run this afternoon. And with that, let's move on to the next item on the agenda, which is item number 10, application 05-0221, APN 027-112-17. It's a proposal to construct a new 1,476 square foot two-story single-family dwelling on a vacant parcel. It requires a coastal development permit. The property is located on the east side of 9th Avenue, approximately 100 feet south of the intersection of 9th Avenue and Dolores Street. The applicant is Angelie Dion. The owner is Thomas Stevens. It is in the first supervisorial district, and Annette Olson is the staff planner. Do you have a staff report?
I do. Before I begin my presentation, I'd like to make two changes to the staff report. This is a double frontage parcel because it's between 9th Avenue and an alley. So the rear yard is considered to be another front yard. So on page 3 of the staff report, in the site development standards table under rear yard setback, I'd like to change that to other front yard. And following from that, because fences in front yards cannot exceed 3 feet, I'd like to add a residential development permit so that the fencing in the other front yard may be considered as a part of this application. So those are my two changes. This is a vacant 3,200 square foot lot in an area zoned single family residential with a minimum lot size of 3,500 square feet. The proposed two-story, three-bedroom, single-family dwelling meets the site standards for the zone district and provides adequate on-site parking. Because the proposed house is very close to the allowable floor area ratio, this project is conditioned to not exceed the FAR 50% limit. The project site is part of the Harbor Area Special Community, for which there are specific design criteria, including clean lines, pitched roofs, and wood siding. This project was originally designed with stucco as the finished material, but it has since been redesigned to be finished with hardy plank shingle siding and a stone veneer. The county's urban designer has reviewed and accepted the design as meeting the special community design criteria. This parcel is also a part of the coastal zone, and this project is in conformance with the county certified local coastal program. Staff received one email about this project from a neighbor, and the neighbor's concern was the possible obstruction of their view. So staff recommends approval of application 050221 as condition and certification of the environmental determination.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is the applicant or owner present and would like to address the zoning administrator? So come forward, state your name for the record, please.
My name is Angelie Dion, and I'm the designer. It sounds like the FAR has been settled, that we are at 49.9%. I do have a document that shows that. I just, since I use CAD, I printed out the floor plans and created rectangles showing the floor area on each of those and adding them up. And as far as the design, I don't know if there was any problems with the roof. We heard there might be, and I was prepared to address that, but if that's not an issue, then I won't go into it.
I do have some concerns with the design of the roof, which okay. I'll get to a little bit later on in the hearing here.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure when that would happen.
And once I do speak on it, you're more than welcome to respond to it.
Okay. And I guess the only other issue that that I have and my client has is about the wood siding. We feel like there are a number of reasons why wood siding doesn't make sense in this location. And this neighborhood is full of stucco homes. Some are new, very new homes, beautiful second two-story homes. Some are historic. They're clearly old, have been there a long time. And they're faring much better than the wooden homes around them. A lot of the wooden homes are just completely dilapidated. They've become shacks now. And we think that's because they're so close to the ocean and the salt air and the fog and, you know, termites and all of the other things, all of the other problems with wood siding. So a question we had for the planners that we've never gotten a very clear answer to is, what is the objective of the ordinance stating that there needs to be wood siding on homes in that area? Because if the objective is to have neighborhood compatibility, it seems like there's already not neighborhood compatibility. The stucco homes are going to be there for 100 years, and it's like if we can't go back and tear those down to build all wooden homes with wooden siding. If the objective is to have a nice-looking neighborhood, it seems, in our opinion, that the stucco homes actually look much better than many of the wooden homes. They are easier to maintain. They have a cleaner appearance. They go in. They fit in with the nautical theme better. So those are some of our concerns.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to address this item? Anyone at all for this item? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. Discuss the floor area ratio. I calculated the floor area ratio twice on this project and could not come under 50%. It came somewhere between 51% and 52%. However, there is a condition proposed that says that the structure cannot exceed 50%, and the construction drawings that would be submitted with a building permit would have to prove that the structure is less than 50% floor area ratio. But I did have difficulty coming to below 50% in my own calculations of the plans, which I did twice. But I believe we have a condition that properly covers that. But I do appreciate your calculations, and then staff can certainly refer to it when the time comes to look at the building plans. I do want to say for the record, the addition today of an approval request for the 6-foot fence, I want to let it be known for the record that does not require that this item be re-advertised, in that fences up to 6 feet in required front yards are usually administrative permits and do not require public hearing. So we can add that approval today without having to take the item and re-advertise it in the newspaper and mailed notices and so forth. So that is why I think it's appropriate and all right to do that today without having to continue the item. As to your design issues or concerns, I can tell you an issue that I had when I went out to the site was that this house, proposed house, is situated between two very small one-story houses. Clearly, it is a neighborhood in transition. It's not quite transitioned yet, but it's clearly starting to transition if you look around you. But I am still mindful of the houses on either side of this, and that there be a graceful transition between their small bungalow one stories and your more modern two-story house. And the part of the design that gave me pause in looking at whether we're having a graceful transition from these houses were the gables on each of the side yard elevations, and I felt that that right angle 90-degree transition was not a smooth transition, and I think we could get to a better transition between these one-story structures and this proposed two-story structure by having a modified hip roof instead on either side. Not a complete hip, but a modified hip to get rid of this 90-degree angle.
Oh, right. So you're talking about the main roof, the
yes.
big roof at the
yes,
top.
Yes, the main roof.
I see.
Yes, so that when you're looking at the structure from the street, you don't get a box sense up at the roof line. You get a bit of a stepping in.
So if we were to do like a Dutch gable where it's hip up, like the neighbors on to the south have a Dutch gable roof where mm-hmm. it's hip and then it has a gable above that, a small one, and that lets them put in a porthole window or some architectural element, would that be something that would be acceptable?
Yes, I think it would be. I just want to get away from that
right.
that's boxy, yeah. you know, right angle yeah. type of a look there. And then as to...
My client has just brought me the sign-off for the neighbor on one side who looked at the plans mm-hmm. and said he was completely okay with them, that he liked the plans. The neighbor on the other side didn't sign off, but my client did speak with him, and he didn't have a problem with the plans as submitted.
I thank you for the information. I still have that concern. Like I said, it's an area in transition. You're one. This is one of the pioneers, basically, of that neighborhood in transition, and I just want it to be as graceful as we can get.
I can understand your concern, and one concern that we would have in terms of hipping, making that a hip roof, is that it would take away from the very precious storage that, you know, this is, you know, maxed out as much as we can, and even trying to get closet space was very difficult.
Right.
We do have the pull down stairs into the attic, and that was going to be the primary purpose, is just to get some extra
right.
storage.
And that's why I'm saying it doesn't have to be a complete full hip roof where mm-hmm. you'd lose a substantial amount of storage. It could be a modified mm-hmm. hip roof, so we get take the edge off those mm-hmm. ends.
Okay.
Without completely losing, you know, a lot of storage. I live in a small house. I know how precious storage is in a house.
Excuse me. I'm Thomas Stevens. I'm
yes.
the owner. If we cut it back, let's say, 3 or 4 or 5 feet from the end to whack that back and then brought that gable out on both sides, you know, as a basically a false gable, but we cut the hip into the gable like what she's talking about, mm-hmm. then we would still be able to preserve most of the storage in there. And we would cut the angle and the edge off. But I just want to know how far we'd have to go back before we'd really be cutting that storage, because there's only storage on one side because
right.
of the staircase
right.
picks up everything in the turnaround.
Right.
And right now it goes all the way to the wall there. That's like the critical space. But if we came back, 3 feet, the overhang, and then 3 feet into that or 2 feet into that, we'd mm-hmm. be cutting 5 on each side. I think that would be...
I think that would be sufficient.
The only issue is on the other side, where we have the staircase, when you enter, mm-hmm. I think there'll probably be enough, as long as there's enough of a landing to get, you know, because we have to walk around the staircase.
Right.
It's only a 4-foot hallway, and that, you know, there's just a
right.
space to come around just to keep egress and all
right.
that around. So I don't think that would be too, we just basically chop the tops mm-hmm. off, you know, and cut them back.
Yeah.
I don't think that would be a problem.
Okay. And, of course, the staff planner will review any revised plans, and she can certainly consult with me, but I think you're understanding what I'm saying. Now, you asked a question about the different requirements in the for stucco versus wood siding and so forth in the Harbor Area Special Community. That came out of the preparation of our local coastal program when the county took back jurisdiction from the Coastal Commission so that we could issue coastal permits instead of people having to go to the Coastal Commission and get their coastal permits there. And as part of the plan that we had to adopt and get approved, the harbor area was designated as a special community, meaning it had special design standards. And those were set up to not only preserve existing development, but also to give guidance to future development. And I'm the first to say that it isn't completely uniform, that we don't have areas that are all stucco versus areas that are all wood. There certainly is an eclectic mix, but it is part of the plan that we have to find that we're in conformance with to approve a coastal permit in this area. And therefore, I believe the wood siding is the preferable material and is consistent with the plan rather than the stucco. So I'm going to require that the plans as shown with the wood siding be
One of the issues we had with that was that it was recommended, since we wanted to create a home that would be fairly low maintenance, stucco, of course, is the better choice. And then it was suggested that we use hardy plank, which is a fiber cement material that or siding material that looks like wood. A lot of people don't think it looks like wood and think it looks pretty tacky, actually. But so that's, it seems, you know, we're trying to balance out, you know, what will work and be low maintenance. The other thing about the hardy plank is that they've had a lot of class action lawsuits against them because it's not a proven material, in that they claimed it to have a lifetime of, you know, 25, 30 years, and after the first 15 years, people were discovering they could just push their thumb through it because it had gotten moist, and it's clearly going to get moist in this setting. So it seems like it's not something that I would want to spec, even though it's been recommended, because of the liability issues. If it doesn't perform very well, I don't want my client to have to take on that responsibility of possibly having to re-side the house. And this was sort of the suggestion as an alternative that was also low maintenance. But it just, can you think of, is there another solution that isn't going to be subject to termites, that isn't going to be subject to rot, that's going to last a long time?
That isn't stucco.
Yeah.
Actually, we have the urban designer in the audience today, and I defer that question to him since he is an architect. If I'm putting you on the spot, I'm sorry, Larry, but if you could answer that, I appreciate it.
Well, I haven't heard about a lot of defects with the hardy plank. I know a lot of people who use it and haven't heard any complaints. In fact, most of what I've heard is that it'll last for the next 300 years. I mean, far more than any natural product. It's a cementitious product. So literally, it is like a cement board. So I don't know about the defects. Another thing that looks like wood that's put up is vinyl. I think there is a quality kind of vinyl siding. But that's certainly, you know, we could make it a condition of approval that we review any alternative that the applicant may suggest.
Okay, thank you. I've also not heard any particular concerns about this material.
I'll just to inform you, in the 90s there was a class action suit against hardy plank for that precise reason, that it was, if it got exposed to moisture, it just deteriorates from the inside out, and it's not even a structural material at that point. And since then, a number of other manufacturers of composite siding have also been faced with class action lawsuits. I did print out something from the web that talks a little bit about that, that I could submit to you today. But it just doesn't feel like it's been in the market long enough. There have been problems in the past. They say they've done a new mixture and different adhesives so that now it's going to work, but it's only been 10 years, and so we don't know yet. It hasn't been proven.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, please come to the microphone.
I think part of our reservation with the hardy plank is that it hasn't been around long enough to obviously prove that it lasts 300 years or 25. They haven't even actually been producing it in existence to cover their warranty. But that doesn't mean that it won't last. It's just there was that one suit, and it was only a single suit. But I have a different question. There, on my street alone, there are three houses that are stucco, two-story, that have been built in the last 5 years. On another one, there's one within the last 3 years. I guess that was the harder issue that I had there. I understand the historic significance of having both, and that makes a lot of sense. But having, you know, just really loved a stucco home. I mean, if we just want to take facts out of it and just put in opinions, loving the environmental aspects of it and the maintenance, but also the environmental aspects of it. It's hard for me in my own street to drive down and see three new homes, talk to the people, and say, well, yeah, you know, the code for this Coastal Commission is over a decade old. How did you get approved? And they really said they didn't have any knowledge that there was stucco. So I understand maybe a couple of them are mistakes, but it seems to be there's a lot of them. On 8th, you know, and 9th, there are, you know, almost 10 stuccos that have been redone completely in the last 5 years. So, we're at your mercy in a way, obviously, but it's something we really have a strong desire to do because of what we want, you know, in the end. And also, you know, in doing my research around there, in terms of resale value, because there is a concern if I use hardy plank or even wood siding, because people realize the maintenance of having wood siding is so extreme, and when they're going around the neighborhood, they can see the dilapidation that occurs. Stucco has a better resale value. So it's kind of hurting my economic position here if I need to, because it is a vacation home for us. We may or may not have it forever, and we need to be able to be sure that we can exact our, you know, the right revenue for it. So I understand that's not the number one reason at all to approve something or not, but I just wanted to, you know, I want to kind of understand how is it okay for them to be able to have a stucco home and not us. I guess that's what I'm asking.
Thank you. Mr. Gasparowicz, you had something to say? Well,
I will add that it's confusing in the ordinance because of the two zonings.
Yes.
And the wording is different for the RM zone, which we've always interpreted. The wording does say and stucco. So that may be part of the confusion. I'm not sure which houses got permits and when, but that's part of the confusion reading the code as well.
Yes, and I would agree that reading that particular part of the code has been problematic for me for 22 years since it's been in effect. I will close the public hearing. I am going to approve this application, and that does include approval of that 6-foot fence along the alleyway. I want to make some additions to the findings. The development permit findings, so we can include the fence in the approval. And for development permit finding number 1 to be added to the end of that, and I'll give you a written copy of these findings. I'm going to add the finding, the proposed 6-foot fence will not be detrimental to the health, safety, or welfare of persons in the neighborhood or the general public, in that the fence will not block or reduce sight distance or shade existing properties. In development permit finding number 2, I'd like to add a phrase that discusses the fence. So the first sentence of development permit finding number 2 will read, this finding can be made in that the proposed location of the single family dwelling, and I'm adding the phrase and fence, and the conditions under which it would be operated or maintained will be consistent, and so forth. So we're adding the phrase and fence there. For development permit finding number 3, under the second paragraph at the end of that, I'm adding the language, the proposed 6-foot fence is also consistent in that it will not block or reduce sight distance or adversely shade adjacent properties. So what that is doing is adding the required findings for the approval of the 6-foot fence. As to the conditions of approval, we already have an existing condition, Roman numeral 2
B4 that says the finish of exterior materials and color of roof coverings must be approved by the County of Santa Cruz's urban designer prior to the issuance of a building permit. Color boards must be 8.5 by 11 format. I think that's sufficient for you to propose some type of alternative exterior material than the one shown on the plans. However, I do not believe that stucco is appropriate here, and it would be have to be some non-stucco alternative material if you want a exterior material different than the one shown on your plans. I can tell you when I went out to the site and looked around the neighborhood, the stucco houses I saw to me were glaring to the neighborhood. They didn't gracefully fit in at all to the neighborhood, and I don't think a stucco house in your location would fit in well with the neighborhood. So I am not approving a stucco exterior for this. So based on the revised findings and the conditions as submitted by staff, I am approving this application. And that concludes item number 10. Okay, item number 11 is application 05-0136, APN 027-044-09. It is a proposal to demolish a three-car garage and construct a single-family dwelling with a one-car attached garage. Requires a coastal development permit, a variance to allow an approximately 6-foot encroachment into the required 15-foot rear yard setback, and to exceed the floor area ratio of 50% to approximately 59%. The project is located on the east side of Assembly Way, approximately 45 feet north of the intersection with Eaton Way in the Live Oak Planning Area at 514 Assembly Avenue. The applicant is William Rennie Boyd, for the owner, Thomas and Allison Kennedy. It is in the 3rd Supervisorial District. The project planner is Larry Kasparowitz.
Thank you, Glenda. A couple of additions. You have received two things. One is a fax letter from Robert O. Carroll. Unfortunately, Mr. Carroll didn't put his address, but he is on the property behind the proposal, so I can't give that address. You also received an email sent to me by Jerry Ritchie, and Jerry Ritchie lives at 523 7th Avenue and has about 5 points that he would like for you to review. And you've received both of those?
Yes, I have, and I've read them both.
Okay. There's a color board been submitted. That's right here. I have some corrections to the staff report. To begin with, on the first page, this is in the 3rd, not the 1st district, which would make the district supervisor Marty Wormhout. And on the second page, this is in the coastal zone, but it is outside of the appealable jurisdiction. So it is not appealable to the coastal zone. Okay, and I think that's it. I will talk about the findings when I finish the staff report.
Okay.
So this is a 2,400 square foot lot located on Assembly Avenue. This is part of the Yacht Harbor area in Live Oak. The zone district is R13.5, which is a 3,500 square foot minimum site area. The applicant is proposing an approximately 1,300 square foot house on a 2,400 square foot lot. The application meets some of the site standard. It meets the front yard setback of 15 feet. It meets the side yard setbacks. The minimum standards are 5 feet. The proposed residence has both 5 and 8 foot setbacks. It meets a lot coverage standard of 40% maximum. The proposed residence is at 39.5%. It is below the maximum height of 28 feet. The proposed residence is 26 foot 6 inches. This is a two-bedroom house, and there are 3 parking spaces required. 3 are being proposed, 1 in the garage and 2 uncovered on the driveway. The difference between the R13.5 standards and the proposed residence is being asked for in variance. The first is the rear yard setback. The applicant was proposing that approximately half the width of the residence project to about within 10 foot 6 of the rear property line. And in the floor area ratio, the applicant is proposing that the floor area ratio be 58.9% instead of the maximum 50%. Staff can support the 2 variances. This is a very small lot. It's approximately 68% of the minimum size within that zone district. The bulk and mass of the structure is minimized by a portion of the garage roof being one story, and the roof over the stairway essentially being an extension of the main roof, which is slightly over one story. I'd like to change or add to some of the permit findings. In the development permit findings, number 1, it says the proposed single-family dwelling will not deprive adjacent properties of neighborhood of light, air, open space, in that the structure meets all current requirements, and I'd like to add, except for all current setbacks, except rear setback, for which a variance has been sought. And in development permit findings number 3, the second sentence, and meets all current site and development standards for the zone district, and again, except for rear yard and floor area ratio variances, which are being requested. Okay. And I'd like to add a paragraph, which I'll give you a copy of, for the variance findings. That is at the end of variance finding 1, I'd like to add a paragraph that this lot has a relatively unique position in the neighborhood. Most of the Assembly subdivision lots are south of this location, and the majority are still individual parcels. This section north of Eaton Street is unique in that many of the parcels have been combined, the parcels on both sides of this lot, for example. And in addition, the zoning at the end of Assembly Avenue itself is C4, or Commercial Services District. The impact of an additional 9% floor area ratio to the neighborhood is minimal, if noticeable at all. And I've included the assessor's map, which shows the lot combinations at the end of Assembly Avenue in terms of being a rather unique kind of combination. And you have the zoning map, which shows the change in zoning to C4 at the end of Assembly Avenue. With that, staff is recommending approval of application 05-0136 based on the attached findings and conditions and certification that the proposal is exempt from further environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. First of all, if I understand correctly, and please let me know if I do not understand correctly, the area of the proposed house that the variance request for the reduced rear yard setback, that portion of it is
It's essentially where the stairway is.
Is a stairwell.
Correct.
And that there are no windows in that area that would look out over the property to the rear. It appears that there's a skylight in that area, but not a window that would be looking out to the east over the adjacent property.
That's correct. The only light to the stairway is through skylights.
And also, as part of reviewing Mr. Carroll's letter, he was very concerned about the possibility that this structure would block sunlight and result in mold problems and lack of sunlight enjoyment for his property. Could you speak to that, please?
Certainly. This, in terms of the variance, the stairwell is actually not a full two-story height. So even without the stairwell, we'd have approximately the same roof line. The other thing about the orientation of this property is that it is east-west, and so the major impact for shadows would be on the north side, and there will be certainly late afternoon, there will be some shadows, but I believe they will be primarily in the applicant's own rear yard.
So the property to the east would not, in your opinion, be in shadow?
It will also probably have a 6-foot fence. I don't know if that was shown on the drawings, but I doubt if the, except for late winter afternoons, would be the only time that the rear property might be slightly affected. But I doubt if it would touch the house okay. in any event.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is the applicant or owner present and would like to address the zoning administrator? If so, come forward. Mr. Boyd or Mr. or Ms. Kennedy?
William Rennie Boyd, architect. I just want to concur with Larry's opinion about shading the neighboring property. The roof was designed to come down into the rear yard, and any shading that would occur would be less than the fence, I'm fairly positive. And if there's any other concerns, I'd be happy to address those as well.
Okay. You've read the staff report?
Yes, I have.
And you understand it? Don't have any comments to it?
No comments.
Thank you.
Okay.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no, yes, please come forward and state your name for the record, please.
My name is Chris Lamb. I live at 523 Assembly Way, one of the neighbors. I'm here today just because I'm a little bit concerned about parking issues. It sounds to me like the parking is probably taken care of, but there is no on-street parking available in this area, and it's a small turnaround area. We've had problems with parking over the last couple of years, and I just wanted to voice that concern.
I appreciate that. I was out to the site, and I totally agree with you. You have a real challenge for on-street parking and turning around. It took me a while to get my car turned around after I made the site visit, so thank you.
Okay.
And just to let you know, they are required to provide 3 parking spaces on their own property
right.
To meet our codes.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to address this item? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Good day. My name is Jerry Ritchie. I am the landowner directly to the north. I also agree with Chris that parking will be an issue. And as I addressed in my email to you, the parking seems to be only taken care of in this area when they use the parking from the park. So currently, for instance, the people that live in the house that's on the corner of Eden and 7th, those people do not really park at their house. They park over where the park people are supposed to be parking. And this is because in most residences in this area, more than the normal number, we'd say for in other cities, are living in these residences. And I understand you may not have proper guidelines for this, but I mean, that is a serious issue. I happen to live right next to the park also, and it's pretty dangerous when the park people have to find park places way far away in order to walk to the park and cross that street. So I would like you to address that issue, as well as there are a few other issues in my email to you. Should I discuss those now, or will you?
If you would like to, feel free. This is your time.
Okay. In the email, I brought forth that this proposal is as proposing to demolish a three-car garage and construct a single-family dwelling. Where is mention of the cottage that was on the property?
I am not aware of a cottage on the property.
I didn't find any building records for it, so it may be that it was extremely old or that we just didn't have a building permit for it.
Well, it was torn down in the last 6 months. And that brings up another issue, is the size of the new dwelling. Living to the north, there is considerable shadowing on my residence when something tall is built. I'd like to see if we can have some addressment to that, since at some time I'd also like to put a house on the rear lot of my property, and I would like to work with everybody as far as minimizing the shadowing. Now, the previous cottage that was there was a single-family cottage, much like the garage. And it was made of wood. It had very little impact, negative impact, on the community. It was a single bedroom, so usually just one person lived there. Not even two people, because it was a smaller cottage. And those are my main concerns.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this item? Would the applicant like to rebut or have any final comments? No? Okay. In that case, I will close the public hearing.
Yes. Glenda, if I could mention, I think when I was discussing with Mr. Ritchie that one of the things that we can do is have the applicant record that this remain a single-family dwelling. Mm-hmm. To at least alert future owners that they can't convert this into two units in any way.
Okay.
And I think that would make a good addition. I would like to point out to Mr. Ritchie that, though, that the bulk of the house, the two-story element, is the furthest from his property. Where the closest to his property is really a one-and-a-half-story building with a portion of the garage and then the two-story behind it.
Okay. Just to address Mr. Ritchie's issues, when I did my research on this application before I went into the field, I did take a look at the information that the assessor allows us in the planning department to see, and they were only showing a garage structure. They weren't showing a cottage, so I'm not sure what happened about this cottage. We don't show on record that there was a cottage. Not saying that there wasn't one. I'm just saying that it was certainly nothing in our records that showed it. And also, Mr. Ritchie's property is quite large, and I think that there's absolutely an opportunity to site a house in the future on that property that would not be adversely affected by any shading by this structure. And again, as Mr. Sparrowlet said, the two-story element is furthest away from his property, and it is considerably lower as we get closer to that northern property. This was, I can tell you, a difficult application for me to consider whether or not I would approve it. We don't hand out variances left and right, and I really have spent quite a bit of a thought on whether or not it's appropriate to allow this house, including part of last night when I should have been sleeping. But as I have continued to think about it, and also on my site visit, I believe that although indeed variances are being requested, they are appropriate for this site, and I will tell you why I think that's the case. Although we have the variance findings that have been submitted by staff, I think in this case, obviously we have a small lot, 60 by 40, 2,400 square feet. And what was not mentioned in the staff presentation is not only is there a 15-foot front yard setback required for this lot, but there's also a 20-foot front yard setback required to the entrance of the garage. Therefore, when you have the 20-foot front yard setback required and you have a 15-foot rear yard setback required on a 60-foot deep lot, it doesn't leave you a whole lot of room left to put a house. And the portion of the house that's proposed to be closer than the required 15 feet is just a stairwell, doesn't include any windows that could cause more intense privacy issues and so forth. I think that the rear yard setback is justified. As to the floor area ratio, also I gave that a good deal of thought, and what we have here is not a house that is overly large. What we have is a rather small lot. It's only a two-bedroom house. The rooms aren't that large. I think it's a reasonable sized house, and that it's reasonable considering the special circumstance of the very small lot that the size of the house be granted. So I am going to approve this item, and I am going to add a condition. And that's going to be under Roman numeral 2, which has to do with the things that have to be done prior to issuance of a building permit. I'm going to add condition number K, and that will read, there will be a requirement for a recordation of a declaration of restriction to maintain this house as a single-family dwelling. That will be recorded on the deed. Will give notice to any future purchasers that this house may not be used as a duplex or multifamily dwelling and can only be used as one single family dwelling. And with that, that concludes item number 11. Item number 12 is application 05-0167. The APN number is 063-071-27. This is a proposal to amend coastal permit number 99-0593 to redesign a single-family dwelling with a detached one-car garage with bedroom and bath below under construction with a building permit. Requires an amendment to a coastal development permit. The property is located off of Brisa Del Mar Road, across Bonnie Dune Road from Bonnie Dune Tasting Room at 675 Brisa Del Mar. The applicant and owner are Kelly and Brian Moriarty. It's in the third supervisorial district, and Larry Kasperowitz is the staff planner.
Thank you, Glenda. I don't believe you may not have seen the original permit. That's permit 99-0593. 9.3 for a single-family dwelling with a garage with a second unit over it. As you can probably guess from the current drawing, the garage and single-family dwelling are under construction. Second unit are under construction. The driveway is in the same location, and the house is to be approximately in the same area as the approved development permit 990593. This parcel is 5.32 acres. It's currently vacant except for the garage and second unit that's under construction. This is inside the coastal zone and also appealable to the Coastal Commission. So application 990593 authorized the construction of a two-story, 2,550-square-foot primary single-family dwelling, as well as this detached two-story accessory structure consisting of an 840-square-foot garage workshop with a toilet and sink at the first floor and a 740-square-foot second unit at the second floor. A landscape pergola and a pond were included, as well as grading of 240 cubic yards of cut and 215 cubic yards of fill, and installation of two 5,000-gallon water tanks. In 2003, a time extension was approved for the original permit. The new owner has a building permit currently for the second unit, which is under construction, and this application is essentially to revise the main dwelling in approximately the same location as the original approval. And you have a copy of the original staff report, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. This is in Redwood Meadows Ranch, which is a rural subdivision. It consists of 12 residential lots off of Bonnie Doon Road. It has development envelopes, which have not been any requests to revise those. Construction within the Redwood Meadows Ranch subdivision is subject to the review and approval of the Redwood Meadows Ranch Homeowners Association Architectural Review Committee. And you have a letter as Exhibit K that essentially this house has been reviewed and approved by the Homeowners Association. In terms of site development standards, all the standards are over the minimum standards. This only requires a 40-foot front yard setback. The front yard setback is 226 feet. Side yard setback is 20 feet, and the proposed residence has side yard setbacks of 184 and 134 feet. Lot coverage allows 10% maximum. The lot coverage now is 1.4%. This is close to the building height. It's 27 feet, where 28 feet is maximum. This is a three-bedroom house where three parking spaces are required. Two are being provided in the garage that's under construction, and two are being provided as uncovered spaces. There's no additional grading being proposed at this project site. The driveway was previously constructed. Approval has also been secured for the septic tank and the leach field design from Environmental Health Services. This project is not between the Shoreland First Public Road and is not identified as a priority acquisition site in the county's local coastal program. This has been designed and has been reviewed by the urban designer and complies with the requirements of the local coastal plan or section 1320 of the code, and there's an exhibit in your staff report regarding the design review. So as proposed and conditioned, staff is recommending approval of application 05-0167 based on the attached findings and conditions and certification that the proposal is exempt from further environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is the applicant present and would like to address the zoning administrator?
I'm present, but I don't really have anything to say. Sounds like everything's pretty straightforward to me.
You've read the staff report?
Yeah, I've read the staff report, and I don't have any problems with it. Everything seems clear and no problems. So.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this item? Anyone? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. I have been to the site. I agree with the staff's recommendations, their conditions, and their findings, and I will approve this application. That concludes item number 12.
Item number 13 is application 05-0022, APN 028-143-10. It's a proposal to demolish an existing single-story, single-family dwelling and construct a two-story, single-family dwelling with an attached garage. It requires a coastal development permit. The property is located on the west side of 14th Avenue, approximately 125 feet north from the entrance to the state park, and is located at 185 14th Avenue. The applicant is Derek Van Alstein. The owner is Williams and Mary Albanese. It's in the first supervisorial district. The project planner is Larry Kasparowitz.
Thank you, Glenda. There have been a couple of changes that we've discussed with the applicant, and you have received some revised pages. They're shown at the back of the room as item 13. To begin with, the applicant was proposing greater than 50% of the front yard setback to be used for parking, and they have agreed to eliminate the one parking spot that's in Turf Block, which would make it less than 50%. And then there was a question about the basement being designed according to the definitions in which it would not be counted toward the floor area ratio. The applicant's redesigned to take out that portion of patio that would have caused him to be over the 20%, and we've reviewed this, and now it is less than 20%, and therefore it will be considered a basement. It is less than 7'6" height, and therefore won't count toward floor area ratio or number of stories. So with that, this parcel size is 8,378 square feet. There is a single family dwelling on it. The last page of the report, that's Exhibit J, is the assessor's screen showing that this is currently a three bedroom home. This is at the very end of 14th Avenue in Live Oak, and it's located near Black's Beach. The proposed single-family dwelling is a three-bedroom house in terms of the R16 standards. It meets all the proposed proposed residence meets all of the standards. 20-foot front yard setback. The side yard setbacks are 5 and 5 because the lot is less than 60 feet wide, and it is 7'1" and 7'11" side yard setbacks. The rear yard setback is 15. This proposed residence has approximately a 68-foot rear yard setback. In terms of lot coverage, this is close to the maximum. It's 29.9%, where 30% is maximum. It's close to the building height ratio. It's at 27.15 feet, where 28 feet is the maximum. And it's at 45% floor area ratio, where 50% is the maximum. There are four bedroom proposed in the new residence. Three spaces are required, and four are being provided, in the garage and two uncovered. This has been reviewed for Chapter 1320, the local coastal plan, by the urban designer, and found that the design is visually compatible with the existing neighborhood. The project does propose 460 cubic yards of cut for the construction of the basement. However, grading under the outline of the structure does not engage the grading ordinance. Okay. Staff would just like to add two conditions of approval. One would be 2B5, which would limit the parking area to 50% of the width of the lot, as we have discussed previously. And number 6 would be that the basement shall meet the planning department definition per the county code. And with that, staff is recommending approval of application 05-022 based on the attached findings and conditions, and certification that the proposal is exempt from further environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is the applicant present and would like to address the zoning administrator?
My name is Derek Van Alstyne. I'm both the applicant and the designer, and as you've discussed, I'm fully aware of the changes that have been made and the proposed additions to the conditions, and I have no problem with any of that. So unless you have questions, I'll leave my comments to that.
Okay. No, I do not have questions for you. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to address on this item? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing. Based on the revised submittal showing that the property is in compliance with the county's basement definition and in compliance with the county's parking regulations, I'm going to approve this application with the revisions that were submitted by staff in the way of the conditions.
Okay.
And I'm going to amend one of the conditions of approval, and that has to do with parking, and that is Roman numeral 2H. Just a moment. It currently reads, provide required off-street parking for 3 cars. I'm going to add a sentence in between that sentence and the existing second sentence to read, a 4th parking space is allowed in the driveway apron. A 5th parking space is not permitted. So this application is approved with amended conditions.
Thank you.
The final item on today's agenda is item number 14, which is application 05-0287, APN 067-202-64. It is a proposal to co-locate a wireless communication facility, including 3 pole-mounted antennas, on an existing monopole camouflaged as a tree, and construct equipment cabinets and a fenced enclosure. Requires an amendment to commercial development permits 96-0566, 99-0171, and 02-0411. The property is located on the west side of La Madrona Drive, approximately 200 feet south of the intersection with Sims Road at 155 Firehouse Lane. The applicant is Evan Shepard for Peacock Associates. The owner is Rodney Parsons. It's in the first supervisorial district, and David Heinlein is the planner. But before he gives his presentation, I will read the following statement. For the record, no state or local government or instrumentality thereof may regulate the placement, construction, and modification of personal wireless service facilities on the basis of the environmental effects of radio frequency emissions to the extent that such facilities comply with the Commission's regulations concerning such emissions. I wanted to put that in the record. We are bound by this as decision makers, and I wanted to have the public aware of what we can and cannot rule on. With that, do you have a staff report?
Yes, I do. Good afternoon, Glenda. The project site is 2.04 acres in size and is zoned RA, residential agriculture, and has a general plan designation of R-R, which is rural residential. The proposed project is not a principal permitted use, but can be conditionally approved. The project site is outside of the coastal zone. Since the proposed project is visible from Highway 17, a county-designated scenic corridor, the following mitigation shall be used to avoid potential visual impacts from Highway 17. The new antennas shall be painted non-reflective green color to match the existing monopine. That's condition 3A5. And the associated ground equipment cabinets shall be painted neutral earth tone and color. That's condition 3A2. And only manual lighting will be allowed, and that's condition 3A7. Staff would like to add a condition, which is 3A8, which states the antennas shall be flush mounted to the existing monopine. This will further mitigate the proposed project from adjacent properties in the Highway 17 scenic corridor. I'd also like to amend the condition 3A2 to say three associated ground equipment cabinets. The project site is a mapped biotic according to the county's GIS system. The proposed project lies outside any mapped biotic zone as determined by environmental planning staff on site visits. Environmental planning determined that the proposed project will not have any negative impact on any biotic resources on the parcel. That's Exhibit F of the staff report. An alternative analysis was not required because it was determined by planning staff that any other alternative would require an additional telecommunication monopole or monopine. Lastly, one more change is this was the applicant wanted this. Change all wordage in the entire staff report from associated equipment shelters or shelter to associated equipment cabinets. So I changed all those from shelter to cabinets. The proposed project 050287 meets the requirements regarding the telecommunication ordinance, the county zoning ordinance, and the county's general plan. Staff recommends that the zoning administrator approve project number 050287 and certify the environmental determination. This concludes staff's presentation, but staff's available to answer any additional questions the zoning administrator or the public may have. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question on your staff report on page 4 under visual analysis. On the second paragraph, you're saying private views could be affected by the proposed wireless communication facility. Is that correct?
No. I changed that from private views will not be affected by the proposed wireless communication facility.
Okay, so it is your opinion that they will not be affected?
No, the antennas are going to be 81 feet in the air. The only person that's going to notice it is someone who knows these cell towers, such as myself. The public will just drive right by them, and they won't notice it. They won't know what to look for.
Okay.
Because it is camouflaged to be a monopine tree.
Okay, and I have been to the site and have seen this tree. Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is the applicant or owner here and would like to address the zoning administrator?
Thank you. Evan Shepard representing Metro PCS. I'm with Peacock Associates, and I do live in the county. I've read the staff report, and I appreciate the minor wording changes by staff. And I'm in agreement with all the conditions. We can paint the cabinets if you'd like. They're a kind of a taupey gray color right now. Behind a 6-foot fence, they stick up perhaps another half a foot. If the county would prefer that they're painted a neutral earth tone color, we're amenable to that. The other thing, lastly, condition 3A8 was recommended to be added or added by staff. And looking at the plans, flush mount in the industry is used for being very close to the pole and not on large cross arms, like the old antennas had arms coming out and then arms across, and then they mounted 4 antennas on each of the triangulated arms. These arms are still approximately 2 feet from the pole itself, and that allows the equipment to get out beyond the thicker part of the faux branches. They're still within the branches and within the leaves or the needles of of the faux pine tree. So nothing is proposed to extend beyond the foliage. They're all within the foliage. So I don't know. So flush mount to me means you bolt it right to it. And we're asking for approximately 2 feet off the main pole.
Let me ask the staff planner, hearing this testimony, how do you react to that?
2 feet would be acceptable. You'd still be within the branches if you want to look at the plans. What staff's trying to avoid is the antenna array that Sprint has above it that sticks out beyond the branches. But 2 feet still includes them in the branches, so they're hidden. So 2 feet would be acceptable by staff.
Okay.
And we will paint them the non-reflected Enviro green color.
That's it. Condition.
Any other comments?
We do meet all federal guidelines, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And of course, we would appreciate your support in approving this application today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to address this item? Please state your name for the record.
My name is Jennifer Anderson. I live at 290 Sims Road, and I received a notice of the public hearing because I'm within 1,000 feet. I tried to research this issue, and although I found out quite a lot, I still have questions. Is it appropriate to ask questions?
Go ahead if you're confused about what the application's about, and we'll do our best.
How many towers are currently on the property, and when were they installed?
Two. And they were installed 96 and 99 when the towers went up.
So this is one of them, and then there's a regular tower?
Yes, there's one that's not camouflaged like a monopine.
Okay, so 1996 and 99. Were we as neighbors notified for a public hearing at that time?
Yes. In 1996 and 1999, those permits did require a public hearing, just like today's requires a public hearing. However, the regulations for how the area that we notify people for the hearings were different back then and have since been amended to require that more people be notified of these types of applications. So yes, there was a public hearing and notification. It may be that you were not within the area at that time that received a notice.
Okay, because I don't remember anything, and I don't, and none of the neighbors that I've talked to remember anything. Okay. There, it asks for three new co-locations. And from my understanding of what was just said, those will be within the structure of the tree, and they won't be taller than it?
It's one co-location of three panel antennas.
Okay. And will they be taller than the tree?
They'll be approximately 81.7 feet in height, which is not at the top of the tower.
Yeah, okay. So they'll be located within the branches, not
they'll still be camouflaged.
Above the tree.
And the... I understood you to say the fenced enclosure is 6.5 feet high.
Six feet high,
and that the cabinets stick up a half a foot above that.
Yes.
Can you tell me how large the cabinets are?
I'm going to defer that question to the applicant. I don't know exactly how large they are, but we came up with conditions stating that they'll be painted a neutral earth tone color, so they won't be white.
It's just that on Sims Road, which is less than 500 feet away, we also have a fenced area with cabinets from the telephone company. So we've got now two fenced cabinet areas and very close to each other in a rural neighborhood. So there is an aesthetic question. How many co-locations can be put on a single tower? Is there any limit?
That's a hard question to answer. The industry, I would guess on a 90.
We do not have the technical expertise to tell you the maximum number of co-locations that could be on a tree. Any future ones would also require a public hearing, let me put it that way. And it also, just to let you know, the area looks like it's going to be fairly small where the cabinets would be. Looks like maybe about 12 by 12 feet. Yes.
That's the lease area.
Yes, the lease area is 12 by 12, so it's not a large area where the cabinets would be.
Okay. Can the height of the existing tower be changed without public notice?
No.
Okay. I heard what you read, and I understand it. I'm opposing the initial installation because we weren't notified. I know that we weren't within the footage at that time. And I'm opposing the co-location because of the proximity to both the children in the neighborhood and the children at Brooknell School. I know that the research is inconclusive, and I know that the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996 doesn't allow for public health reasons, but I do know that there's indication that children are more affected by RFRs than adults, so I'm concerned about the proximity of the school, which is within 1,000 feet. My main concern, however, is about process. We've been told that public health is not a grounds on which we can oppose this. I've been told that at previous hearings, property values are not a ground, have not been a persuasive argument, and I'd like to know if there is any grounds on which this could be opposed, and if so, what that would be.
Well, there could be issues of visual intrusion, possibly.
Okay.
There could be issues that the proposed access to the site not be adequate. I'm not saying that that's the case in this situation, but those are the types of things that we have heard neighbors talk about, testify at these types of hearings about.
Okay. It just seems like your hands are tied on some of the big issues, and it makes it very frustrating. It must make it frustrating for you, and it certainly makes it frustrating for us. It seems like my input can't affect the outcome of the hearing, and so it seems more that maybe that a notification of an action to be taken would have been more appropriate in this case. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this item?
My name is John Anderson, and I'm owner of the property at 290 Sims Road. And just to follow up on a couple of things that Jenny mentioned, something that you mentioned just now, David, is something about the aesthetics and looking at the fact that there's one that looks like a tree and then there's another one that doesn't look like a tree. I'm not exactly sure how that all happened. But if you're going to put one on there that looks like a tree, why don't we have two that look like a tree? Point. Another concern I have is about the notification of the nearby residences to this plan. And in a call we made to the principal of Brooknell School, Kathy Frandl, she was unaware of this. I don't know whether that was an internal problem within Scottsdale Unified School District, but in talking to David Heinlein over the phone, he said that there should be a list of all of the properties within, I believe it was 1,000 feet, that should have been notified. And I just want to make sure that Scottsdale Unified School District was notified, because I do believe they're within 1,000 feet in estimating our distance from this tower and Brooknell School from this tower. They seem closer than we do. So
yes, what we have here is a list of all the properties that were notified of this public hearing, copies of all the assessor's parcel number and mailing addresses, and that does include the Scotts Valley Union School District, 155 Treetop Drive, Scotts Valley, California, 95066, for assessor's parcel number 067-35114. So we did notify the school district.
And to answer your question, hypothetically, if someone did come in on the second lower pole that doesn't look like a tree, one of the conditions that I would make it is it would become a monopine instead of a monopole.
Yes, I would appreciate that. It definitely looks like something other than
I would
something that would be found in that area.
I would recommend approval of a monopine to be replaced. Right. I can't say that would be approved or denied or anything like that, but that would be one of my goals, would be to assure aesthetically the area.
Right. And lastly, I would like to express also my concern that as a local government, as local government officials, that it's my understanding that you feel largely hand-tied in this affair because of the federal legislation, and that I intend to follow that up. This is just the beginning of my concerns in this area, and I just want to state that.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Is there any, pardon me, is there anyone else who would like to address this item? Seeing no one, does the applicant want to rebut or have any additional comments? No? Okay. In that case, I will close the public hearing. I am going to approve this application. And as to the proposed conditions that staff read to us, I do want the cabinet to be painted earth tone. I think that will blend in better with the surrounding area than the pale gray color that's shown in the photograph that I'm taking a look at. So I am going to make sure that that's a requirement as recommended. Also, the condition that had to do with the flush mount condition, as we discussed, a 2-foot distance out rather than a actual flush mount appears to be amenable to staff and to the applicant, so I will put that in as a replacement to your recommendation that it be has to be completely flush mounted.
How would you like me to phrase that?
The part of the condition that you read, the part of the condition you read when you got to flush mount.
Shall be 2 foot?
Yes, maximum 2 feet. And then the other item that I'm going to do as part of approving this is to make a clarification to the CEQA notice of exemption, which is page 22 of the staff report. Under the reasons for the categorical exemption, I want to change the existing wording, which reads currently existing residential development in an area allowed for commercial uses, to proposed commercial use in an area allowed for residential uses. And with that, that concludes the last item on the agenda. Thank you, everyone.